On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Just right, walk right up here on the porch and kick your feet up. Get you a cold glass of sweet iced tea. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn. I'm Bob, of course. No, I'm Bob Kincaid, not Bob, of course. Who do I think I am? It is Friday on the front porch on the horn, and we are all set for a dandy. Mighty warm here in the hills and hollers of what's left of almost level West Virginia. Mighty warm indeed. A few high, sort of thunderstormy-looking clouds out there, but nothing falling right now. The air like a sodden sponge. And here we sit this Friday. This Friday, the 28th of May. Standing on the verge of Memorial Day weekend. A serious, serious holiday marked now by incessant barbecuing and the industrially produced hamburgers being ruined on grills and turned into little patties of charcoal. But it's Friday on the front porch on the horn. And we're going to have a good one tonight. We are definitely going to have a good one tonight going into the holiday weekend. The Memorial Day weekend traditionally being the gateway into official, if not, geophysical summer. Summer sort of begins with Memorial Day. Back when America had a real infrastructure, back when communities cared about themselves, back before the Republican Party ruined everything, this was always that weekend that children looked forward to when the pools opened. When they'd be splashing around in the cool swimming swimming pool waters of community swimming pools all across, but not anymore, at least not around here. I have no idea when the pool will open here in Fayette County, but we hope that it will. But it is. It's the unofficial opening of summer, and I guess they're going to drive some fossil fuel-laden automobiles very quickly somewhere around Indianapolis or something this weekend at some point. Not one of those that just grabs me. I'm not a race car racing fan, but, you know, whatever. I'm sure there'll be good music playing somewhere. But what we're going to do tonight, we're going to prop our feet up, and we're going to talk. And here in about a half an hour, we're going to have a conversation with our good friend Bob Furtick from Democrats.com. Just a general political discussion to get the weekend going. We will let it see where it takes us. I've got a few things on my list. I'm sure he's got a few things on his list. We'll get together with him here in about 26 minutes or so. By the way, program note, we will be on the air Monday night, I assume. I would rather mark Memorial Day by being here than not being here. And remember those who need remembering and offer you a chance to remember any that need remembering on Memorial Day. Good enough? I hope so. And thanks to you, we have, I asked for 200. I got 25% of that. Thanks to the 50 of you who have gone and liked Nancy's Yogurt on Facebook in that little horn experiment we've been carrying out. That is a number that they will kind of have to notice, I should think. Thanks to you who were active enough to go and actually go to your Facebook account and go over and like them. It was apparently too much for some people, but it wasn't too much for 50 of you, and I appreciate it. I really, really do. It's important to see what kind of things we are willing to do, especially when there are things that don't cost money, that might contribute to some overall idea down the road. So thank you to you. That's right, Marty. That's right. Sweet iced tea? No. Shall we say adult beverages? We shall say that too. That goes without saying on the front porch. There's always a big zinc galvanized wash tub with long necks and brown bottles stacked up to their very caps with crushed ice and a little bit of rock salt thrown over top to make the ice cooler and the long necks colder by extension. So yeah, that's involved too. But weather like this, you don't want to go the hard liquor cocktail route. I just don't think so. No. Well, sangria might not be bad, though. Sounds tasty, doesn't it? Now, where to begin? Where to begin this evening? Why don't we begin with crazy? You know, there's mean we can go to, crazy we can go to. Let's go to mean and crazy. I know, some of you are sick of hearing about him, but you know what? This guy has to be buried. This guy has to be covered up. No, he doesn't have to be buried and covered up. This guy has to be exposed for the freak he is. I suspect you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking, of course, about Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Sheesh. You know, we spend a lot of time on this program talking about the horrors of mountaintop removal. Well, Rand had some things to say about mountaintop removal, too. And they're considerably different from what you're going to hear on this program about mountaintop removal. Namely, and to wit, let's see here. Yeah, here we go, Rand.
We need these 100 products. You know, we want the freedom of the marketplace to work. We want the money left in Kentucky and not to...
Oh, we're going to talk about the freedom of the marketplace. You remember that marketplace. That's the marketplace where people are free to not, where businesses should be free not to seat persons of color in their at their lunch counters and so forth. Yeah, that free marketplace. Do continue, Rand Paul, please.
Taken to Washington.
You mentioned coal, and I noticed on your website you talk about energy freedom. What role would coal play, if any, in your overall energy plan for America?
Well, I think huge. I think people out here would find that I'd be a great friend to coal, not because I come to Eastern Kentucky to pander to coal, but because I believe business should be left alone from government. I think the permit process needs to be made easier from the federal level and the state level.
How much easier can it get? I mean, dear God, I mean, look, I know what the permit process is like in West Virginia. The coal company hands a permit to the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, and they say, looks good to me. Because, see, I've actually talked to representatives of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, and I have asked them a series of pointed questions about things that would make them say no to a permit. And at the end of that series of questions, I looked at them and I said, so in essence, what we're saying here is there is nothing out there that would make you say no to a permit. And that's about right. So when Rand Paul says he wants the permitting process to be easier, what he means is he wants there to be no permitting process at all.
I think we shouldn't have special taxes on their profit. I think we should have lower corporate taxes. Those create jobs.
Dear God, they pay next to nothing at all. And they drag the wealth out of states like, portions of states like eastern Kentucky, like all of West Virginia, like eastern Tennessee and southwestern Virginia, and they pay next to nothing for the privilege of doing it. And in their wake, they leave poison, death, devastation, destruction, and hell on earth. But Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, thinks we're still being too rough on them. It gets worse.
I'd much more... rather lower taxes on the coal industry so they can hire a new 100 new workers than...
What are they going to hire the 100 workers for, Rand, you darned idiot? They don't need workers. They do mountaintop removal with vast earth-moving machines. That's why they do mountaintop removal, Rand, you boob. Because it doesn't take workers. It takes less workers. There are 100,000 coal miners in West Virginia in 1980. Now there's less than 15,000, and that's largely by virtue of mechanization. But then again, you wouldn't want to get in the way of mechanization because you don't believe that there's a legitimate hand in the government has any legitimate business in talking about the nexus between the public good and the corporate good. Now, do you, Rand?
I would say, let's tax the coal industry, send it to Washington so we can get 100 new people digging a ditch that may or may not need to be dug. So, yeah, I'm greatly in favor of that. I think.
Do you hear the snotty elitism in that garbage? Take taxes from the coal company and send it to Washington so we can get 100 people digging a ditch that may or may not need to be dug. This guy does not live on the same planet with you and I. He lives in a sort of Somali, anarcho-Randian, Haitian the world of greed and avarice and excess. And I think he's another one of those people we were talking about last night whose brains have been irretrievably broken by the function of avarice on the endorphin centers such as horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner and I were discussing.
Coal's a big part of our future because we have a lot of it.
Lie! Lie! Dadgum, Rand Paul, you stinking libertarian ophthalmologist liar! We don't have a lot of it. There's not 20 or 30 years of coal left in Appalachia. And Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, what happens when it's gone? And the coal companies pack up and leave. Is that when the libertarian fairy is going to land and take her little libertarian fairy wand and her libertarian fairy dust and you ping, and everything's going to be okay and everything's going to be back to normal and fixed? No, Rand Paul, it's still going to be a toxic daggum mess. You freak.
Still in the United States, it's fairly readily accessible, and it's where we get most of our electricity. Coal out.
Liar! Liar, liar, pants on fire, liar! It's where we get most of our electricity. Less than 45% of the electricity in the United States comes from coal-fired generation, and it is dropping. And that's a good thing. That means coal is being outpaced by the combined effects of wind and solar and hydro, and probably a little bit of icky nuclear. The change is coming. But Rand doesn't want to be part of it because the only thing that matters in Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist world, is the incessant, sickening drive for more lucre. Now, he ain't no Christian. No, sir, not by any stretch of the imagination. Rand Paul worships at the bloody-headed shrine of Mammon. There's no doubt about that. But don't just sit there and lie about how we've got plenty of coal. We don't. We don't.
Pete, a lot of people don't know this. You may out here know this. But about half of our electrical needs come from coal, and it's cheaper than...
See? Liar. Still lying. And now he's going to talk about it being cheap. Let's back up so we can get to the cheap part real quick. He's going to talk about it being cheap, but it's not cheap. The power company that services my region here, Appalachian Power, if they get this latest round of rate increases that they have petitioned a very compliant public service commission in West Virginia for, will, since the year 2006, have gotten a 70% rate increase. How is that cheap coal-fired electricity? You tell me, because I can't answer it.
I don't know this. You may out here know this, but about half of our electrical needs come from coal, and it's cheaper than oil and gas, actually, for your electricity.
What about mountaintop removal?
I think...
Uh-oh. Okay, I'm going to back up for a minute here, because I'm going to have to strap in all Bill Hicks style, peace be upon him. What about mountaintop removal? Have I got the guts for this? I'm going to hang on real tight here, okay? What about mountaintop removal?
electricity. Coal outcompetes, a lot of people don't know this, you may out here know this, but about half of our electrical needs come from coal, and it's cheaper than oil and gas, actually, for your electricity.
What about mountaintop removal?
I think whoever owns the property can do with the property as they wish. And if the
Okay, stop. I think whoever owns the property can do with the property as they wish. Rand Paul is apparently too ignorant of this issue to realize that companies like Massey Energy do not own the property. They merely lease it from land-holding companies that go back to some of the worst bad old days in Appalachia that we've ever known, the ones after the Civil War, when people who had held land for generations were swindled and hoodooed and huckstered out of it by, I guess you would call them libertarian land speculators in the pay of railroad companies and coal companies and steel companies and the like. But you see, these are easy, facile answers that he's been handed by coal whores and coal thugs and fiends of coal. And the fact of the matter is, listen to that. Whoever owns the land can do with it what they please. What about the people who own the land adjacent to it? Because, you know, this guy's all about constitutionalism. He's going to be a constitutional purist, and he just wants liberty. Well, what about the liberty of the guy? What about the liberty of somebody like my dear friend Bo Webb, who lives at the foot of a mountaintop removal job and has had dust and fly rock and poisonous after effects of explosions literally rained down upon his home and the land that his family has owned, yea, verily, for generations? What about him? Within the common law, which goes back a piece, there's something called the right to quiet enjoyment. In other words, I ain't bothering you, don't you be bothering me. It's a very Appalachian concept. What about the right of the people next to a mountaintop removal job to quietly enjoy their property? Because you can't enjoy your quiet property quietly when your well's been poisoned and when your innards have been burned up by toxic coal waste. You can't sit out on your back deck and watch the sun set up the holler when the air is literally filled with choking toxic dust from the mountaintop removal job adjacent to you. You cannot do it. You simply may not. What about that, Rand Paul?
Coal company buys it from a private property owner, and they want to do it fine.
Liar. They don't buy it. They lease it. But anyway, we'll go back.
I think whoever owns the property can do with the property as they wish. And if the coal company buys it from a private property owner and they want to do it, fine. The other thing I think is I think coal gets a bad name because I think a lot of the land apparently is actually quite desirable once it's been flattened out. As I came over here from Harlan, you've got quite a few hills. I don't think anybody's going to be missing a hill or two here and there.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to be missing a hill or two here. How about 500, Rand Paul? How about 500? Missing hills, you filthy bastard, you sorry, miserable, soulless, psychopathic, sociopathic, the broken brain freak. I don't think anybody's gonna miss a couple of hills. It comes quite useful, that flat land. You know, this guy wants to be a senator from Kentucky, and yet he doesn't know about Sink Sink. You know about Sink Sink. We've talked about Sink Sink. The federal prison that was built on mountaintop removal land that continues to settle and won't stop settling so that the prison gates won't close. You know, a prison that's gates won't close, it's not much of a prison now, is it? That's why the locals, with that classic gallows sort of fatalistic Appalachian sense of humor, call it Sink Sink. Idiot.
Some people like having the flat land. Some of it apparently has become quite valuable when it's become flattened. And I think they do a good job at reclaiming the land and, you know.
Which is just merely proof that he's never been anywhere near a so-called reclamation site. Because remember, when the coal company's involved, the first two words of reclamation are wreck and lame.
Adding back in topsoil, bringing in elk. So I think they're
bringing in elk? Well, hot damn! What do the elk live on, Rand? They have to be fed externally because they can't eat the crappy non-native grasses that grow. Oh, you idiot.
Doing a good job at it. But the bottom line is, it's not just me pandering to coal. It's me believing in private property.
It's not just me pandering to coal. It's me pandering to coal and then pandering to coal some more. Because I believe in private property. But still no answer from Rand Paul about the private property ownership of those around his corporate pals. See how these guys are? But that's not all there is about Rand Paul. I'm done with him here because he's, well, yes, made me sick. Dan, I'm sure I'll get an email in a minute saying, well, enough about Rand Paul. Again, this is the face of the teabaggers. These are the goons that they want to put in charge of you and of me. And this next one will make you want to scream. Now, Rand Paul is a constitutionalist, right? I mean, that's what I believe in private property. I believe in the Constitution. I'm a libertarian. But I'm running as a Republican because a libertarian can't get elected. Because everybody knows, everybody just identifies a libertarian with being a Republican who wants to smoke dope. Yeah. Or as our head writer, David in Tennessee, noted, libertarianism where ignorance and evil meet. At Rand Paul, he wants to blow up Appalachia because he don't live there. But it's not just that. Oh, no, not by any stretch of the imagination. I got minutes upon minutes upon minutes of Rand Paul here that I'm not going to go into all of it. We'll just excerpt the quote, okay? We won't use the audio. Rand Paul is a strict believer in the plain language of the Constitution. That's why he's Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Never mind the fact that there were no ophthalmologists back when the Constitution was written, so Rand Paul doesn't actually exist. You know, it's one of those, a priori, a fortiori, one of those things I forgot from philosophy class, but he don't exist. But the Constitution is made up, as we all understand, Constitution is made up not only of the original document itself, you know, the articles and everything, but then they started amending it because they, back in the process, back in the day, you know, walking around in their hose and their lace collars and velvet coats in the middle of July and all that crap, the framers of the Constitution couldn't get an agreement on the Constitution until certain guarantees of certain liberties, civil liberties, were enshrined as amendments to the original body of the work, which, by amending, incorporated them within the four corners of the document, okay? We went over some of them last night, as a matter of fact, in dealing with that freaking Texas little prayer to Jeebus, thanking Jeebus for the Bill of Rights. Remember? Yeah, I do too. Rand Paul says he believes in the whole Constitution. Well, the whole Constitution includes the amendments, and one of those amendments makes clear that persons born in the United States are citizens of the United States. It's not a statute. It's not a law. It's the Constitution. It is part of the essential framework of what it means to be this country. He did an interview with a Russian television station, and he said, I recently have been talking more about satellite observation. They say you can sit in front of the store here, and a satellite can read the headline on your newspaper. Uh-oh, he's got his tinfoil hat out. This should be fun. So I think you could also monitor your border with satellites, and then you just have to have some means of intercepting people who come on illegally. You could have helicopters, stations, positions every couple of hundred miles. And then this. Oh, Lord, then this. We're the only country I know of that allows people to come in illegally and have a baby, and then that baby becomes a citizen, and I think that should stop also. He thinks that should stop also. really. He thinks that the guarantees of citizenship enshrined within the Constitution that he professes to strictly adhere to should stop also. I don't know. Maybe I was wrong about the hard liquor. Who are the people who voted for this goon in Kentucky? Who are the people who are sitting? I think he's getting a bad rap. He just needs to be sent. He needs to be sent. He's a good man. Who are they? Are they? Well, they're the people who follow the Constitution that lives only in their head, like that Onion article we referred to from time to time. Can you imagine? And see, this is one of those positions that's a darling of the hateful right wing, because they like to call babies of undocumented immigrants who were born in the United States and are thereby United States citizens, they like to call them anchor babies. Anchor babies. Yeah. Anchor babies. This all has to do with the 14th Amendment. Again, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the states wherein they reside. Anything fuzzy in there for you or me? No. Rand Paul, apparently. But again, please understand, this ties in with the fact that this guy doesn't believe the civil rights part of civil liberties. He's a libertarian, but his libertarianism extends only to corporations and only to business and not to human beings. Civil liberties are civil liberties. Freedom of the press, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, freedom to arm bears, jury trials, the no quartering of troops, search and seizure, self-incrimination, reasonable bail, all of that stuff. They apply to individuals, and they are civil liberties. They are civil rights. But where those civil rights impinge upon some sort of sick and twisted vision of the godhead of business for Rand Paul, they have to be done away with. I don't have to tell you whose real philosophy this sounds like. I think you already know. And before we take a break and bring on Bob Furtick, one last thing. A little bit of breaking news. Not breaking, but sort of. Oliver Stone has a new documentary coming out called South of the Border. And he interviews a number of so-called left-wing leaders of Latin American countries. One of those people he has interviewed is former Argentine President Néstor Kirchner. You gotta hear this to believe it. You just gotta. Stunning, really.
Were there any eye-to-eye moments with President Bush that day, that night?
Okay, hold on. So what? So the question here from Oliver Stone to Néstor Kirchner is to do with conversations he had with President Bush, former President Kirchner did. Okay? That's just the setup.
Were there any eye-to-eye moments with President Bush that day, that night?
Yo digo que no hay que ser, ni hay que arrodillarse ante el poder, ni se necesita ser maleducado para decirle las cosas que tienen aquellos que han usufructuado y han juzgado a nuestras naciones. Se genera una discusión en Monterrey, y yo digo que acá la solución para generar rápidamente, ¿qué es la solución que hay que hacer?
Don't all you English speakers feel stupid? You can't speak Spanish! The Spanish speakers in the audience are sitting there right now going, what? ¿Qué? Ay, de mí. Because what's going on there, after the question, Kirchner says, I said that the solution for the problems right now, I told Bush, is a Marshall Plan. And he got angry. He said that the Marshall Plan is a crazy idea of the Democrats. The Marshall Plan. No, really. He said the best way to revitalize... Sit down. Strap in. I mean it. He said the best way to revitalize the economy is war, and that the United States has grown stronger with war. Oliver Stone, war? He said that? He said that. Those were his exact words, says Kirchner. Stone, is he suggesting that South America go to war? Kirchner, well, he was talking about the United States. Quote, the Democrats had been wrong. All the economic growth of the United States has been encouraged by wars. He said it very clearly. You know, we used to call him a warmonger. Guess what? He was, he is, a psychopath into the bargain. So that's the first 30 minutes of Friday on the Front Porch. I'm going to take a little break and get Bob Furtick on the phone, and I got a feeling we got 30 minutes of great conversation coming with him. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. You're listening to The Horn.
Nature of the beast. Warmer is the battleground.
dogs of war indeed. Why am I not surprised that George Bush saw making war as an economic policy choice? Why am I not? I'm not surprised by that because you're not surprised by that because we're not surprised by that because that's the kind of thing that George Bush was. Anyway, it's about 25 minutes before the hour, and joining me on the line here in just a moment will be Bob Furtick. Bob's been with us before, and he is a trenchant student of political news and political process in this country. That comes as by virtue of the fact that he has lifelong been progressive, I would dare say liberal. He's been a Democratic Party activist. He's also a very well-known blogger out there and stands at the head of a group of supporters, 635,000 members strong, at Democrats.com. So without further ado, let's bring Bob on. Hey, Bob, welcome to the Horn.
Pleasure to be with you.
Oh, it's good to talk to you again. How's things out and about? What are you seeing with your thumb on the American political pulse beat? What's your sense of the country right now?
I think this is a very interesting moment. I think the oil spill in the Gulf could be quite a transformative moment as far as American politics goes. We've got a real serious problem on our hands. We've got a disaster going on. We've got an unquenchable thirst for oil and fossil fuels. And we need to find a new way. And this is the moment where the country's really reckoning with that problem.
This is a clarion call, Bob. Do you think the country's listening?
I think people are taking it in. I think it's devastating news, and it's going to take a rethinking of everything we've been and everything we've done since the invention of the automobile. And, that's going to be a hard process to go through, but I think people will come to the realization there are no quick fixes. There are no technological solutions to everything. You have to start thinking about serious conservation and changing our lifestyles.
Do you have a sense, if you were to choose, with the... the word spill seems so highly inadequate. We've been toying with things like man-made oil volcano, just trying to come up with a frame for exactly what this thing is. There seems to be a right-wing attempt to lay more and more of this at the feet of President Obama and as compared to at the foot of BP. Who's winning the PR war right now?
Well, President Obama's in a no-win situation. There's nothing he can do. He can't put on a cape and dive to the bottom of the ocean and plug the well by himself the way some right-wing critics would like to see him do. The government doesn't have any technology that the private sector doesn't have. We don't have any weapons in our arsenal that we can shoot down and plug the hole. So what are the choices? The choices are BP's got to stop the spill. And we can watch it on TV and we can see the struggle of fighting off that massive gusher of oil. There are no simple solutions. It's, massive oil flow coming out of the earth, out of the center of the earth.
Do we have a chance, Bob, of seeing some level of accountability this time through? The whole process with the Exxon Valdez proved to be very disheartening. Do you have any reason to hope that it will be different this time around?
Well, just on the legal end of things, first of all, we have a murder case. We have 11 people dead, people who worked on the rig who were killed during the explosion. So there's a murder prosecution that will happen. That will be proved to be not an accident, but the result of corporate negligence, decisions that were reckless, and those will be criminal acts that will be prosecutable. Maybe not first-degree homicide, murder, but, some form of homicide. So there will be prosecutions. BP is a repeat offender because of their actions in the Texas refinery that blew up and other enforcement actions where they've been ordered to improve their safety performance, and they have not. So, you know, that on the criminal side. On the civil, on the damages side, there's no way that BP is going to walk away from the massive damage they've caused to the Gulf Coast, to the fishing industries, to the tourist industries. Every person who's out of work, every business that's shut down, BP is going to have to pay. And it may push them into some form of bankruptcy, but BP is a big company. They make a lot of money. They're the fourth largest corporation in the world. So all the oil wells that they're drilling around the world can pay for the cleanup and the damages on the Gulf Coast.
You know, as a lifelong Democrat in my own right, who is often frustrated by the, well, you know, I'm sort of like Howard Dean. I come from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. What do we expect Republicans to behave like Republicans? You know, that's like expecting a rattlesnake to bite people. But what do we do with so-called Democrats like Mary Landrieu, who, granted, she allegedly misspoke, but said BP will take care of this at its convenience, and then went to Politico yesterday or the day before and went to great pains to criticize President Obama, while all the while being as quiet as a church mouse about BP's very fundamental and egregious culpability in this. What do we do with those dinos?
Well, the voters will have to deal with them. We're going to see with Blanche Lincoln in a couple of weeks. She's one of them. All the Democrats who take corporate money, who put corporate interests ahead of the interests of the people, are transparent. They can pretend, they can, like Mary Landrieu, try to pretend that they're not totally in the pocket of big corporations, but the voters know, and they will be held accountable. We have a very robust Democratic Party. There's a lot of energy in the Netroots. There's a lot of fundraising capability. When you look at a guy like Bill Halter in Arkansas, it was the Netroots, it was the labor movement that gave him the resources to now lead in the primary. So we can mobilize progressive voters, and we can change the Democratic Party.
And speaking of successful Democrats, one of the untold stories that I've been reading lately are, because I was just talking about what a freak Rand Paul is, one of the stories not getting told as much is the Democratic turnout for the candidates for that Senate seat in Kentucky as compared to Rand Paul's vote totals. Is somewhere off in teabagger land, are they quietly wondering if maybe they peaked too soon and their energy's running out a little bit, or are we still sort of sitting here on pins and needles and hanging on tenter hooks, waiting for the other shoe to drop in November?
The Tea Party is the best thing that's ever happened to the Democratic Party. People like Rand Paul and the guy in North Carolina, DeNunzio, and Sue Loudon in Nevada, and, you know, the list goes on and on. These people are nuts. Their ideas are totally out of sync with America. The only way that the right was able to win was with people like Ronald Reagan, who were committed to the conservative ideology, but were able to present an image of being mainstream. And the teabag candidates are not mainstream, and they can't pretend to be mainstream. When they're asked a question about things as simple as integrated lunch counters, they can't come up with a basic, straightforward answer. So they're the best thing that's ever happened to them.
And speaking of another election that's out there, I was one of those who was solidly behind Joe Sestak in his campaign against Arlen Specter, because I go back far enough in my political observations to have a working knowledge of the number of times that Arlen Specter put the shiv to a Democrat or made life worse for the nation with people like Clarence Thomas. This business with what. Can you opine or speculate, why did Sestak feel it necessary to bring up that they offered me a job thing again after he'd won the primary over Specter? What purpose did that serve, Bob?
Well, I can't account for Joseph Beck's unique personality. It's a little different from what I'm used to, but he is who he is. But, you know, this whole thing has backfired in the face of all those journalists who've turned it into a scandal. This goes back as old as politics. I'm sure it goes back to the Greeks that, you know, the people made deals to avoid candidates running they didn't want to see run, and offering them jobs was one way of doing it. Ronald Reagan did it with a guy named Hayakawa in the Senate primary in 1982. So if we're going to impeach Barack Obama for it, we'd have to go back and impeach Ronald Reagan for it. It's a total non-issue. The lawyers who look at it, people like Crewe who are scrupulous about ethical issues, when they look at it, there's no there there. There's nothing of value that was given in this situation.
And yet what do you call them, Bob? How do you talk about our for-profit media in this country and what now passes for journalism? Why do they leap all over this stuff?
Well, that's real easy to answer. That's because of Fox News. Fox News will come up with one of these smear jobs, and they'll get some of their friends in the White House press corps to echo those smears. That's what they did to Van Jones. That's how they drove Van Jones out of his job in creating green jobs. They do it all the time, and it's just pure Fox smear tactics. You got Hannity screaming about it night after night. It becomes the lead story on all the Fox shows throughout the day. And the Republicans, of course, join in. So you had all the Senate judiciary members who never for 8 years saw a single reason for a special prosecutor, whether it was the war lies or the torture, none of that, or the total corruption of the Department of Justice by Alberto Gonzalez and Karl Rove, or the outing of a CIA, covert CIA agent, none of that warranted a special prosecutor. Suddenly, a job offer for a non-paying job becomes grounds for a special prosecutor. I mean, I think people...
I seem to recall a failed land deal that caused them to have the same kind of hissy. But maybe that... And yet, you say Fox News, Bob, and what I find fascinating out of that is that, yeah, that's how Fox acts, but... I guess after a decade or so or more of Fox, the Fox style book is apparently bleeding over into other media outlets. Is that a fair statement? Because you know, now this thing's on the front page of the New York Times, for heaven's sakes? The front page? Really? But it
well,
is.
That's the power of Fox News. It doesn't matter how many times they lie. Doesn't matter how many times they're wrong. They are a powerful network. They have a powerful message machine. They amplify it with all their allies, like Rush Limbaugh, who's not technically Fox, but is on, you know, sings the same song. They have senators who are theoretically credible people making the same allegations, even though they're totally baseless. So they have a very sophisticated way of doing it. And, of course, remember, Karl Rove sits in the Fox News corporate headquarters playing the same games that he played when he was in the White House with George Bush. He's pulling the same strings. He's getting the same journalists to carry his baggage. And, you know, it's very subtle, and there are a lot of fools who make their living as pundits and journalists who just buy whatever comes out of that noise machine.
That is a sad commentary on the state of the Fourth Estate in this country today. Let me shift gears on you real quick, Bob. The don't ask, don't tell vote. Five Republicans broke in the House to vote with the majority on the repeal of don't ask, don't tell. Is that enough to say that maybe the is there enough there to say that the so-called solid wall of no is beginning to show some cracks?
Well, if you look at who voted. Which Republicans voted, when you have a Ileana Ross Leighton, who represents Miami with its large gay community, you're not really talking about progressive Republicans. You're just talking about Republicans who happen to have large gay constituencies. And, you know, so we'll get some of those votes. But the Republican Party rhetoric during the debate last night was not one of love and tolerance. It was pure homophobia.
Hateful.
And we'll see more of it. Yes, hateful. And we're going to see more of it when it goes before the Senate. And people who are closeted gays, people like Lindsey Graham, will start denouncing the bill. And nobody will even point out, you know, that it's widely known that Lindsey Graham is in the closet. So they can still play that game and play to their base. But the American people have moved on. I've seen polls where 70-80% of Americans think that if a patriotic gay person wants to sacrifice and fight for his country or her country, there's, you know, we should welcome that. We should honor them for their commitment and their patriotism. So it's the American people have moved on. This is not 1992 anymore when people got hysterical when Bill Clinton said he would consider allowing gays to serve. We've moved well beyond that.
I share your sense with regard to the American people, and I hope this thing works out. It was a little bit, honestly, it was a little bit hopeful when I saw that Dino among Dinos, the Ben Nelson from Nebraska, say that he could side with this the current plan. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, he's supportive, you know, willing to go along with it. So I think the only Democrat is against it is Jim Webb. That's the only name I've heard.
And that's the only name I've seen either. And frankly, I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what to make of Jim Webb. Do you?
Well, he was the Secretary of the Army, or was it the Navy? I forget.
Navy, like 6 months.
Right, Secretary of the Navy. And the service chiefs are objecting to this. And he's probably reflecting that. But, you know, it doesn't matter. The enlisted people are supportive of it. And so even if senior officers are opposed, it will work. The our enlisted forces will welcome patriotic gay service members just as the rest of society has.
And they're already and that's the thing perhaps we forget too easily. They're already there, Bob. They're in the military, they're in the foxholes, they're in the showers, you know, despite all the hand-wringing and freaking out on the part of the right wing. Gay people already make up a significant portion of the military, the only difference being that they are having to live some sort of shameful double life based on nothing more than an artificial designation of how it is that they are permitted to live their lives. So I'd say, I don't understand what it is about, well, I don't understand the right wing anyway. I guess that's my fundamental problem, isn't it, Bob? As we go into the summer, though, and we started out talking about the oil gusher, is energy the issue du jour of this summer, do you think?
Well, I think global warming will be an issue because whenever it gets hot and people see the record temperatures, that becomes an issue. They're predicting a very active hurricane season, which on top of the oil, we can only imagine if the wind starts blowing the oil, not just to the edge of the shore, but deep into the coast. All of this will come together. And oil and global warming and energy alternative. There's a bill that Congress has to deal with. I think it's going to be a serious issue. Of course, you know, Fox News would rather have us talk about Joe Sestak.
Sure.
But, you know, the American people.
If they could find a missing blonde woman eaten by a shark, they'd talk about that instead. That's Fox News. I don't know if you know or not, but, the Horn audience does. I live in the heart and soul of coal country, and we deal a lot with something called mountaintop removal here, which is a real horror. And the one thing that disturbs me out of this energy bill is that it has massive, massive corporate welfare giveaways for things for the bogus non-technologies like carbon capture and storage. Is that something that you think is going to continue on in this energy legislation? Without which we cannot have a meaningful climate change, meaningful addressing of climate change?
Well, I think we need to hear from coal country voters who share your feelings that oppose mountaintop removal, because the coal industry is very powerful in Congress and represents several key states and owns several key senators, senators from Kentucky, from West Virginia, from, you know, other key states. So the voters really need to speak up if they don't want mountaintop removal and other coal subsidies. It's going to be a tough battle. John Kerry is pushing hard. He's got the president behind him. But there's a lot of things that are wrong with this bill. The environmental community is deeply divided, and I'm not sure how this one's going to play out.
Well, I think the very least thing we can say is that it will be interesting. What is, personally speaking, at the top of your to-do list in the coming 3 months or so before Labor Day hits us and we move into constant 24/7 campaign mode?
Well, first of all, I'm praying for the BP engineers to shut down the oil well. I mean, honestly, as long as that 15,000 barrels a day are pouring out of the Gulf, it's just sickening and heart-wrenching and hard not to dwell on it. Then we've got the cleanup. We've got an environmental disaster. We've got a ecological disaster. We've got wildlife species that are being decimated. We've got the potential that it will spill around the coast, along the coastline of Florida, up the East Coast. It's just so massive, so beyond anything we've ever imagined or dealt with before. So we've got to keep the pressure on BP. We've got to make sure they do pay all the costs. We've got to make sure Congress raises the cap on their liability. We've got to push for campaign finance reform so that corporations like BP can't buy politicians like Mary Landrieu. That's the only way we're going to get policies that don't put profits first, that don't destroy the environment. So that's on the agenda. We've got the energy bill, however that works out. It's going to be a busy couple of months in Congress before they head home to campaign for what seems like the endless campaign.
Well, it does feel like that indeed. Well, Bob, I really appreciate you taking time to join us this evening for this little Friday evening conversation. I hope things go well for you. And when something sets you afire, or a bee really gets under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle, don't hesitate to bring it to the horn, because light's always on here.
All right. Great.
Bob Furtick, thank you very much, sir. I do appreciate it. And have a wonderful holiday weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Take care. Bye now. Bob Furtick from Democrats.com. I enjoy conversations with Bob. He's got a lot of political insight and brings a whole bunch to the table. So we've come to the end of the first hour of the program. And I'm going to take a little break. And hopefully you'll light up the phones. A couple of lines blinking right now. Several lines open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. John Fox sent this along last night, and I gave it a listen. Great tune. He said, just good to drop in when you need to drop one in, from a sort of a supergroup called The Dead Weather, featuring, among others, Jack White of the White Stripes. This is Hang You From the Heavens, right here on America's listener-supported liberal voice, right here on the horn. Oh, I think I'm going to like this. Yeah, I definitely like this.
Hang you up from the heavens. beg you to the devil.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is a public service announcement. Quick and
fun. There's a new type of music program coming to the Horn.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never.
But I won't heed the battle call.
Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch is gone and Kelly have to lose that on the list and then goes on and on.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
Now go on now.
Cut your flag, gal won't get you into heaven.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Oh, yes, you are. You know you are. It's Friday on the front porch, right here on the horn. I'm Bob, of course. No, I'm Bob Kincaid. That's twice I've used that tired, trite piece of crap humor. But why not? It's Friday, huh? It's 5 minutes after 7 here on the East Coast. God knows what time it is where you are. But whatever time it is, I hope you're having a good time. Because we love having you along with us here on the horn. A quick email in from our dear friend Jude up in the great Northwest. You got to hear this. You know what? It's moments like this that you recognize that understanding the internet is still a challenge for corporate America and, well, the corporate world, really. There's no such thing as corporate America. They're borderless. They're transnational, whatever. But Jude just found this and copied it and sent it along. She said, I just located this on a BP site, an article entitled The Push into the Deepwater Gulf. Rule one, thou shalt pay lots of money to thy webmaster who will know every blessed word on thy website and know when to scrub it. They haven't learned that at BP yet. Technology, new opportunities. We are drilling wells in water depths close to 10,000 feet and more than 20,000 feet beneath the seafloor. Through the use of advanced drilling rigs, we can conduct drilling and completion activities, making wells ready for production simultaneously, saving time and money. You know, like $500,000 for that third layer of fail-safe. You know, like using seawater instead of cheaper than dirt and mud, like our horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner from the oil patch of Texas was talking about last night. You know, by saving money and bringing them on ready for production simultaneously, saving time and money and allowing new fields to be brought online sooner. Golly, Ned. Thanks, Jude. That's just a what a little reminder that is. They still got crap on their website, BP does, bragging about what they wound up doing to us. You know, it's interesting that article doesn't say making sure that the well is safe at the same time that we're making sure the well can produce. That's not there. Sorry. No. 8 minutes after 8 minutes after the hour, we will go to the phones.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Pretty good.
Hadn't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, it's kind of warm down here.
Right, toasty?
I've had a lot of computer problems.
Oh, dear, yeah. I'm sorry to hear it.
But anyhow, I just had a few little things I wanted to say, mostly a little bit about a number of things, if you don't mind.
Well, say all of them.
I'm concerned about the skinheads.
I don't think there's ever a time when you shouldn't be.
Well, I think they're getting upset. People calling Hitler a homosexual.
You saw that story too, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the entire...
More than once.
Yeah. The entire Wehrmacht was gay.
Yeah.
I've got that story right here.
Because they were the only ones that had the stomach to do the thing that Hitler wanted them to do.
Yeah, and of course, the people pushing this, the American Family Association. And they've
got that's connected with them.
Yeah, the American Family Association. They've got a director of issue analysis for government and public policy, and his name's Brian Fisher. And he's the one that says, Hitler himself was an active homosexual.
Yeah.
Because we've all seen that grainy old black and white footage of Hitler frolicking around Berchtesgaden in a stunning feather boa and a Carmen Miranda hat, right?
Him and Jagger Hoover.
Oh dear. See, now there you go. You're making trouble again. J. Edgar Hoover was a great American transvestite. Now stop it.
Well, they were, you know, around at the same time.
They certainly were.
Mm-hmm. Think about it. Anyhow.
Yeah, the American Family Association's Brian Fisher said, and Hitler discovered that he could not get straight soldiers to be savage and brutal and vicious enough to carry out his orders, but the homosexual soldiers basically had no limits in the savagery and brutality they were willing to inflict on whomever Hitler sent them after. So, you know, they marched, again, they marched into Poland with feather boas and Carmen Miranda hats. So well, he surrounded himself virtually. All of the stormtroopers, the brown shirts, were male homosexuals. Now, there is some truth in that.
Oh, yeah, the leader, yeah.
The SA and Ernst Röhm had a gay contingent to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because German post-war society, and I'll bet our buddy Jim could probably expand on this because he knows that kind of history very well. German post-World War I society had a blossoming of actual tolerance, if you will, where people did come out of the closet and so forth. But that does, you know, one does not follow from the other. But I'm sure this is an argument. But this is, by the way, this is, you know, this isn't offered for any, well, this is offered to try to make sure that we make sure don't ask, don't tell, you know, stays the law of the land because we can't have them, you know, because, you know, if they come out of the closet in the military, then the next thing you know, Lindsey, like just like Bob Furtick said, Lindsey Graham might come out of the closet. Oh, Lindsey!
They could go buy him some more little rugs in the market.
That's right.
Well,
I bet he has fabulous wall sconces, too.
Fabulous wall sconces.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The curtain window treatments.
Yeah. Well, you know, those people, they know how to decorate. That's what they're saying.
Oh, God, we're going to get in trouble. I say this from a position of love. I mean,
I do, too. But that's what people, I don't
that's
know.
What you and I are talking is how the bigots think.
Yeah. Well, I understand that McCain has come out, you know, against, you know, the people, the homosexuals in Arkansas. No, not Arkansas.
Arizona.
Arizona.
What? Did I miss this one?
It's something in Congress, and I said, I said I'm just being mean and facetious that, it'd be kind of funny if the skinheads started protesting him and some of the others, because they have it for whatever they want. You know, they use different people for what to their own purposes. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And you know, the fact of the matter is, I was talking about him a little bit ago. Guess who's out there been out there fundraising for Rand Paul? Just guess.
Sarah?
No, this is even better.
Male?
Nazis!
I can't believe it. And you know what gets me is they're talking now, you know, all the tea baggers, they're nice people and all, you know, they're not, there's just a few of them, you know, that act up. And he said that, Rand Paul. And I was thinking, you know, a lot of people could say that about the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, speaking of the Klan, you're going to love this. There's a word in here I hate to use, and I hope you'll forgive me and everyone else. But
I'll try.
Rand Paul's campaign spokesperson, Chris Hightower, got himself fired for posting Happy Nigger Day with lynching pics at Facebook, along with posts describing how he liked to go to the local mall in KKK garb.
Really.
That's Rand Paul's campaign spokesperson. Yes.
With the party hats.
Yeah. This is a story that goes back to December the 16th of 2009. From a blog called Barefoot and Progressive, which uses anybody that uses Mark Twain as their sig line, I'm up for, because he says the sig line for Barefoot and Progressive is, I want to be in Kentucky when the end of the world comes because it's always 20 years behind. Mark Twain.
Have you heard about his biography, haven't you?
No.
Mark Twain? You haven't heard?
Heard about what?
his biography coming out.
No, well,
he wrote 100 years ago. He didn't want it. It's been kept under wraps all these years because he didn't want it published until after he'd been dead, I believe, 100 years. And it's coming out, and they say it's 400 pages of woo, 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 you know. There's only he could tell. You haven't heard about it?
No, I'm thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he didn't want everybody to know what he was really thinking at that time. Well, I bet it's going to be great.
Oh, I can't wait.
I don't know if it's come out yet or it's going to come out in a few days, but I heard about three different places on the news. I'm going to just get on to some of the things I wanted to talk about. And, I was thinking about all this, oil in the water. And, God knows what's down there. You know, and what can happen.
Sure.
And, I bet you saw where they found Cleopatra's palace underwater.
Yeah, at Alexandria.
Yeah. And if you look at the article, it tells that the tsunami is why that went under. And I'm wondering if this thing that they've drilled into, if it couldn't explode, you know, no telling where we'll all end up.
Just look, you know, I mean, you're in Florida. You're much more sensitive to this than I am, probably.
Yeah.
It's hurricane season now.
Tell me about it. But the thing is that we don't know how bad it is down there.
Well, you know, hurricanes, if I understand my meteorology correctly, and if I don't, Lord knows I'll get 50 emails explaining how I got it wrong. Hurricanes, when they get going real good, suck up water out of the ocean, right? I mean, isn't that part of the whole, you know, spinning thing, and then it blows over. What happens if it sucks up a bunch of that oil, and then rains it down on
anything? Could happen. Anything.
Yeah, anything.
We have no idea what they say. What God has wrought, what man has wrought,
The only thing is, what God hath wrought is WORUGHT. What man hath wrought is what man hath R-O-T. Wrought.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. But the other thing you were talking about, what Rand said about the mountaintop and all,
yep.
in that simplistic way of thinking, you know, oh, well, stay on the property, you know, but like you said, what about the person who lives by that place?
Well, precisely, which, as far as I'm concerned, just points out what a phony baloney piece of garbage Rand Paul is.
Well, when did he run for Congress? He didn't win. Was it last year or year before last?
It had to be year before last if he ran for Congress.
Because I saw him on a Washington Journal at that time when he was running for Congress. And they were asking him about medical care, and he talking, and him being a doctor, talking about, oh, well, you could go to the emergency room, or you could finagle your way with different doctors by researching and everything. Well, what about in an emergency? Somebody's just about on the point of death. You got to research and say, oh, doctor, will you help me out?
Yeah, well, that's when you bring a chicken instead. That's when you bring the egg instead of the chicken.
Yeah. But
that was flippant of me.
Very cold, you know.
Well, he is because libertarians are cold. Libertarians are well. First of all, libertarians is a bogus word. They are Ayn Randians, okay? They are Ayn Randians.
Mm-hmm.
And those
that's where you got the name.
Right, and you have to remember that for Ayn Rand, compassion was a character flaw. Really, not kidding.
Yeah.
All that stuff that the Bible teaches about if you've done it, you know, that little if you've done it unto me, you've done that one.
Yeah.
that's, well, first of all, Ayn Rand was an atheist. And she's probably the atheist the atheists least like to claim. Because she wasn't just an atheist. She was a mean, hateful, nasty old atheist. And personally, I think she was a mean, hateful, nasty old person who happened to be an atheist. The atheist part didn't make her mean. The nasty part made her mean.
Right. Because we've certainly met some nasty, supposed to be Christians.
Well, more of them than atheists. Most of the atheists I know are actively involved in trying to make this a better world because this is the one chance they get to do it.
Yeah.
You know, no dress rehearsals.
Okay, and then I wanted to talk about, Sandy was talking yesterday, I believe, about serfdom.
Yes.
How would you say it, serfdomism?
The road to serfdom, yes.
Yeah. I had an article that I had saved for a long time, and I think I lost it or whatever. And but it was written back when Ronald Reagan was president. And it just expressed that so well then. I had kind of felt that, you know, that they were trying to make slaves out of us. But, you know, it seems like it's coming out more so now because there's a lot of Republicans get up and say we shouldn't have a minimum wage and all that kind of stuff. And without that, they don't care if you die. They probably got insurance on you. Remember that?
Dead peasant insurance.
They have insurance on you, and your baby that you left behind can starve and
starve.
They got that money.
Yeah.
And they ain't going to help your baby out.
No.
And then another thing that Sandy was talking about was it really opened my eyes, made me think, you know, that how they're talking about how India is prospering now, people by the millions. And she said, what percentage of the billions would that be? Look at all the other people that they're not prospering. Most of them don't have anything to lay on except maybe the bare sidewalk or something. That's kind of made me think.
Indeed. Yes.
And another thing I wanted to ask you, did you see Blankenship's testimony?
Yeah, I did.
What did you think about the last of it, that what Harkin said?
Well, in a way, and I'm not trying to be negative here. I've heard Blankenship speak for so long. I've heard his psychotic babblings for so long. That if he said that little demons were holding him up by the waistband of his shorts,
they probably are.
I would not blink, Juanita. I would not blink. The man is a sociopath.
But what about what Harkin said to him at the end?
Oh, you mean the little blister job that he got?
No, he said, "Oh, I know you care."
Oh, that.
I know you care. I thought, oh, please, get out of that. You're sorry, Lowdown. He was...
And Harkin, Tom Harkin is somebody I've always respected.
Yeah, I do, too. I respect him. But, you know, they have that thing, you know, and it's a lot of it's the way I was raised. You know, you always be nice, no matter how crappy somebody treats you. And you always look for the good in people, and there's a lot of people that don't have a good in them. And that guy was up there, and he was talking about how different things would have helped, but he wasn't allowed to use them, like the sweepers and things like that. And, yeah, he is I call it megalomaniac.
Yeah, that's one word. Absolutely.
And then Representative Icke how do you pronounce his name? He's going about, he thinks he's got Obama on the way out now about that little job offer. He thinks it's going to be He's been on all the talk shows. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
I've noticed about him, every time you hear him in a hearing, he just tries to trip somebody up. And I never will forget one time he was trying to get, when he was on that other committee, and can't think of his name, but he was trying to get something pointed out, and the other guy said, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. And then he left that hearing. But he gets on these shows, and he acts like he's Mr. Nice Guy, but he is really nasty. He is a nasty, nasty man.
I concur in your assessment, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Juanita, we will talk soon. I'm glad you called in this evening because we hadn't heard from you in a while. I'm sorry you've had computer problems, but I just hope Florida doesn't start having oil problems. But you know what? I wouldn't take money on it.
Yeah, well, you know, you just have to hope for the best because there's no place really safe as far as But one thing I wanted to say about that, you know, a few years back that Pat Robertson said we would have tsunamis and all because of the gays having gay days at Disney World.
Right.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he hadn't forgot to put that prayer out.
But somehow or another, that's even a little. Pat Robertson. You know, I saw, speaking of Pat's, I saw Pat Boone hustling gold on TV sometime last night.
Oh, gosh, he's gotten crazier and crazier.
But you know, he's doing a different gold hustle than Glenn Beck. But everybody's got a gold hustle. Yeah, he's with Swiss America. You know, Swiss Miss Instant Gold with miniature marshmallows or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Juanita, have yourself a wonderful weekend, dear.
You too.
All right.
Sorry, I talked your head off.
Oh, you didn't talk my head off at all. Not at all. We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Bye now.
Juanita calling from Central Florida. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's me again.
What's up, Sandra? I just looked at your pictures.
Oh, dear God. Those are terrible. I'm like, I don't even know what to say. That is outrageous.
Sandra sent me along a link from Huffington Post, which I am posting in the chat room right now. It is horrifying aerial images of the Gulf gusher. I can't call it a spill. That first one just makes your head feel like it's going to snap off your neck, doesn't it?
No. It's so sickening. I'm like, you know, just the sheet. I don't know. I'm just, wow. You know, and there's no coming back from that, right? Isn't the marsh where it just gets enmeshed in there and that's it?
Yeah, well, it washes out and it washes back in and it sucks in and goes deeper and the first photograph of that series is really the snapper.
Well, and it's
because you can see if you look carefully, it's way up into the marsh.
No, I know, and I see the booms all around. It's just like,
yeah, they stopped it. No,
you know what I mean. It's just, I don't know. Now they're saying, they won't know in 48 hours. Oh, my God, it is such a load. That ain't working. Whatever they're doing, that's not working.
No, it's not. I was just talking to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, a little bit ago, and he says he's got something to share with us next week that will make our heads just spin.
Well, I enjoyed that conversation with Bob. What's his last name?
Furtick.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing about his conversation was, you know, it's fairly positive and, you know, informative and, you know, I just something that I really needed to hear. So thanks out to him. And it was great to hear Juanita. Haven't heard from her in a while.
Yeah.
The reason why I called is when you're talking about that Rand Paul and that comment about, well, because someone has the property, they can do what they want. I immediately thought about, you know the tragedy of the Commons, Harding or whatever.
Right.
I just immediately thought of that, you know, and I just thought, oh my God, you know, these people are so stupid. I mean, it's just idiotic that he, you know, he just falls back on, I guess, these notes that are handed to him.
Well, yeah, these are tired old libertarian Randian talking points that are 70 years old.
No, but Furtick said, it's like, it's a gift that keeps giving because I kind of have to agree that, you know, that isn't mainstream. And not understanding that we don't want segregated counters, that's not mainstream.
He doesn't. Look, at this point, Sandra, we can ask seriously, why does Rand Paul hate America?
Well,
because America is the Constitution, and the Constitution is America. And the 14th Amendment, apparently much to Rand Paul's chagrin, is part of the Constitution.
No, I mean, he just came out with this, you know, the undocumented children of undocumented people shouldn't be Americans.
But there's one more thing that undergirds all of that, Sandra, if I may take a moment to point it out, is that that is from an interview with Russian TV. Now, if a liberal or a progressive, say the Dixie Chicks, go to England and say, we're ashamed that George Bush is from Texas. Remember when that happened?
Oh, Lord. I mean, you thought the world was going
to
end.
Right. I mean, everybody from Pat Buchanan to Ann Coulter to Rush Limbaugh, and they all say, George will, of course, says this, they all say the same thing. Politics stops at the water's edge. Really? Does it? Where's that right-wing outcry about politics stopping at the water's edge when Rand Paul has to go to Russian television to tell them that the Constitution of the United States is flawed and needs to be changed? Because that's what he says. When he wants to end the legal citizenship status for any person born in the United States, he is saying, by definition, that the United States Constitution is flawed and needs to be amended.
Well, I mean, obviously he falls into that category of those people who, you know, you know, the ones that think there's the 14th Amendment people, and then there's everyone else.
Yeah, but the thing is, if birth does not confer citizenship, I mean, this is really a knotty, K-N-O-T-T-Y, problem. How do we confer citizenship in the United States if not by birth?
Well, you know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. It's completely absurd. And I think maybe who's a Democrat that's running in Kentucky all of a sudden? Because he can keep talking. I understand that the Tea Party is all the rage at the moment because they have a major network backing them. But that shit is not. I'm sorry. Most people are really not that out of it. Can't be.
Well, remember, Fox, for all its reach, has a demographic that is approximately age 69 to dead.
No, I understand, but when you combine that with the Drudge Report and the constant bellowing of the "we're so scared we're going to be accused" liberal media, you know,
yeah.
There's no way that the Tea Party should be getting all this play at all. I mean, you know what I mean? It's amazing.
Well, I mean, does it blow your mind a little bit? Maybe not. That it turns out that Rand Paul's campaign spokesman is a racist, bigot, N-word saying Facebook or MySpace posting the Klan fan?
Yeah, no, I heard about that. I heard they had once again, you talked about it. These fools need to learn how to manage their web page. You know what I mean? They don't know what the hell they're doing on the internet.
Because this thing from him that shows photographs of a lynching and stuff,
yeah,
and says Happy End Day.
Right, right. No, I heard about that.
That was up there that was up on this creep's page for years.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just saying, it's like, hello, none of this shit is lost, it's there forever. And it's just amazing, and they keep producing them, because apparently the chick that may win in Nevada is a real winner. I mean, you know, what's this face should lose that. Reed should be done. But if this, I forget this woman's name, if she comes up, he has a good chance of pulling it off because she's so out of it.
And now she says she never said the chicken thing.
Well, listen, it's like all there, recorded, right there to look up. But what I'm saying is that the Republicans, you know, may not, they may suffer behind their base acting up. Because I don't know who's going to vote for that madness.
And it gets a little worse for Rand Paul too, Sandra. It turns out he's received funds and promotion from white supremacists, neo Nazis, and KKK leadership via that website stormfront.org, and I'm sure you're familiar with them.
Well, yes, the late Tony Snow had a little bit of time on there. Yeah, I know all about that. All right? Please, Tony damn Snow, his ass was on there trying to lie his way. I'll never forget that. I'm like, hello?
There he is,
bitch.
The head of Stormfront.org, Don Black, has actually been out there tweeting to fundraise.
Is the name for real?
Yeah, Don Black, yeah.
Come on now.
You don't miss nothing, do you?
Shit, you got it out of your mind saying that. That's funny, I didn't know. Well, that's just perfect. No, that website is really disturbing, and all the good pound players be spending time there, huh?
Oh, yeah, and there's photos out there of Rand Paul posing with Don Black.
Well, you know, like I said, I don't know what's going to happen in the fall, because I'm kind of concerned with the economic thing, because at the end of the day, I think that's a real mover for people. Nothing else, but that will. And if the economy is going the way it feels like it is, that could really do serious damage to the Democrats, no matter what the Tea Party is putting up, you know?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It's a question of, and then again, there's the other side of that. You know, all through the Bush years, the Reagan years, all of that, people kept saying, you know, if people would just vote their wallets, Republicans would never have a chance.
Well, no, but
and it doesn't.
Also,
but it didn't seem to faze them.
No, but they also, yeah, but as Bob said, you know, they were able to put up people who could front, like Reagan. Although that fool was in Philadelphia, but see, I put that off to dumbasses who didn't know what the hell was going on, except if you knew. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah, that was dog whistle stuff.
Right. You know, and I'm thinking, oh, good Jesus, with the Ronald Reagan, but he was able to sort of transcend all that, to the rest of them. And even Obama was praising that fool, which, you know, I'll never get over that. Remember when he was talking about Reagan?
No, I do.
And I was like, hello? What's going on?
Did I live through the same 1980s as you did?
That trips me. That tripped me out. You know, but he made a good point about the type of candidates that the right was able to put up, you know, courtesy of, was it Lewis Powell in that memo, you see?
There you go.
Now that shit is sort of there's no mystery if you got, like, Rand Paul and...
Yeah, the hood's off.
Or it's on tighter. I mean, I don't know what
Well,
on,
yeah,
right?
Right. That's so true.
I hear what you're saying. But, you know, one other thing I wanted to mention, because I was like, okay, what angle is she playing? Did you hear what Hillary said?
Which? No.
Oh, you need to sit down for this. Hillary said, okay, I'm taking my administration hat off, but the rich ain't paying enough taxes. Anywhere in the world, she said they're not paying enough if you look at the employment situation. She said Brazil, they tax people and they're going like gangbusters. I almost fell over. I'm like, hello?
Is this the same Hillary? I mean, you're talking about Hillary Clinton, right?
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out what is the angle. Because she blew that shit up. She said the rich are not paying enough. And especially in this act. And I'm thinking, wow, hello? So I don't know what's going on.
There has never been, no one has ever made a credible case that she is not brilliant. Okay?
She isn't. No.
And the same goes for Bill. And it kind of ties in with this Sestak business. I mean, did you read the Wall Street or the New York Times article about the? First of all, again,
what's wrong with him?
He wins the primary, and it's an earth-shattering thing because he had to create an entire seismic shift in Democratic Party politics in Pennsylvania to do that.
I understand, but why is he? You know, what is the point of him talking about it after the fact?
I don't know.
And I mean, I'm kind of like, you know, all of it is just kind of weird because it's like, dude.
Sandra, let me just say it. All this is Kenneth, what is the frequency? If you recall the Dan Rather thing, leave it alone. Quit talking about it. It makes you look nuts.
Right. No. That's what I'm, I mean, when I saw that, first of all, I'm like, oh, why are they doing this? As if people don't do this quid pro quo nonstop 24/7. Come on, man.
But the thing is, if you drill down through the story, it all lands in Rahm Emanuel's lap.
Oh, once again, I mean, surprise, surprise. It's like that guy is too clever by half. He's an idiot. Go back to Israel and, you know, clear out some Palestinians or something. Just get on.
You're awful. You're just awful. You know that?
What?
No, I know. But the thing is, it was that Rahm Emanuel called his buddy Bill and said, Bill, go have a chat with Joe Sestak.
Oh, good night. And it just sort of seeps out because the idiot said no to him, no bitches, and went and won, and then came back and started talking, slapping his lips. It's like, shut the...
Because we would like for you to win.
Yeah, win first, you know?
He's up against a right-wing goober.
I know what I'm saying. And one thing you can say about Scott Brown with his neck hit, small D ass. He didn't talk, and now look where he's at.
Yeah.
Exactly. He won.
Yeah.
This guy should, it's like the Democrats. Is he trying to, like, you know, trying to turn the knife a bit? You need to win first, fool.
Well, remember, see, the whole reason Bill was sent to talk to him was because Joe Sestak was an early endorser in Pennsylvania of Hillary. So.
Oh.
It gets weirder.
Well, now
and see, now I want to be clear about something here, Sandra. I am not asserting by any stretch of the imagination that anything improper happened.
I don't think it did,
but I'm fascinated by the power politics of it.
No, and it's just sort of, and also the sort of, the media, you know, how they run with it and just sort of bated breath. It's like, oh, my God, you know?
But what a grand opportunity to get rid of Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, please. It would never happen because I don't really understand what's going on with Obama. And it's just like the more I want to think that he needs to break away and become whatever, FDR Jr., whatever other sort of progressive wonder person, he's just sucked in, man. I don't even know. Is he really just a technocrat politician? Not a statesman, no way, no how, at the beck and call of whatever corporation or better politician like Clinton. I mean, I don't really know. I'm just sort of...
Well, you know, he ran on one of those St. Paul platforms where he would be all things to all people, and it's turning out that he's having a hard time being some of all of those.
You know, once again, too many opportunities are coming where statesmen would be all over it. You know, like Winston Churchill would be all over this spill, for example. Can you imagine?
If in no other sense, but in creating a public image. And that goes back to something you and I were talking about earlier, and it goes back to something Bob Furtick said. You know, he can't put on a cape and tights and fly in Superman down to the well and fix it. And he can't. He really can't. But in the wake of Bush's response to Katrina and in light of the national media frenzy that is that this country's conceptualization of politics has devolved upon, you have to go down and look like you're doing something.
Well, yeah, you don't want to have stories that, well, all of a sudden you go to a beach and all the workers show up, and as soon as you leave, all the workers are told to F off. You don't need those sort of stories coming out.
No.
I'll tell you that. But, anyway, listen, my phone's about to die, so I got to go.
All right. Thanks, Sandra. Good to hear from you. Good holiday weekend to you.
You too.
Bye now. And that's the problem, though, isn't it? What does he do? I want something done. You want something done. We want to be told that something is done, being done. And then bless his heart, he tries to get human for a minute in a news conference and says that, you know, that the gusher is on his mind, that even his daughter, his 11-year-old daughter, has said, Daddy, have you plugged the hole yet? You know what Glenn Beck did with that, right? honest to God, moments like that, I do know that he's probably a better man than I. Because if Glenn Beck said about my daughter what he said about Malia Obama, president or no president, I would cite fighting words and go and at least punch Glenn Beck in the face. At least. If not worse. It's one of those Andrew Jackson moments where he said, I can forgive them for what they've said about me, but for what they said about my Rachel, I can never forgive them. And this is coming from a guy who doesn't have a lot of sympathy for Andrew Jackson, genocidalist. But there are lines that you don't cross, and yet freaks like Glenn Beck cross them routinely and pay no price whatsoever. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, bud?
What's up?
I don't get a chance to talk to you very much because the schedules don't work out, you know, for me very well, so I don't get to listen to you live, so I don't get much of a chance to call in. But I was out on the back porch, and down here in Houston, you can forget it. I mean, sweat pouring out of my forehead and my...
You're living on the sponge.
...was even starting to sweat, and they don't even sweat.
And just the first name real quick? I'm sorry, I haven't placed your voice.
Brad.
Oh, Brad, okay, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, Rand Paul. First of all, if there isn't any more proof that libertarianism is a cult and not a political philosophy at all, but just a run-of-the-mill, everyday, seen one, seen them all cult, his father named him Rand.
After Ayn, yes.
After, I'm not Ann. I'm calling her Ann. I don't know what Ayn means. I don't know what Ayn means or anything like that. I'm just going to call her Ann, if you don't mind.
Yeah, you go right ahead, Brad.
All right. Well, but the fatal flaw in the philosophy of libertarianism, as espoused by such cretins as Rand Paul and Ron Paul, is that they claim to have some sort of insight into the Constitution that the rest of us don't have.
And, yeah, us morons?
Yeah. And, well, yeah, and I don't mind being a moron as long as they recognize that they're psychopaths.
Precisely but, my point.
Yeah, not sociopaths, though. You call them sociopaths. Sociopath is a subcategory of psychopath. They're all psychopaths. But anyway, how can you claim on one hand to be, an American first and foremost and proud to be an American and then at the same time you want to separate everybody? You know, this is yours, that's mine, this is yours, I don't even want to see my neighbors. There's no, you know what I mean? Do you see where I'm coming from on that?
I do.
That's not American. That is completely un-American. And, it all just springs from a cult that Ayn Rand came up with. I think she called it something like objectivism.
Precisely.
And, It's just a religion. It's just a cult. It's just like whatever that Dianetic religion is.
Right, and
they get brainwashed.
Well, all that Randian garbage gets carried through. You remember the first Wall Street movie with Michael Douglas?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Remember Gordon Gekko?
Greed is good.
Greed is good is straight up, dead on, right smack dab out of objectivism.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Gecko. Great name.
Yeah. But, went on to sell insurance, I think. Joke.
Yeah.
No worries.
But, I mean, on a slightly different subject, but not entirely different. I think I remember hearing you on the radio or on your show talking about how you don't have, that you said something about before that you had Fox, but that you couldn't get any of the other
right.
Other stations.
Right.
Well, it doesn't matter. They're all just as bad as Fox, only they do it in a different way. I found I have Warner Cable here, and the remote control for this Warner Cable has, and I counted them, it has 50 little tiny buttons. 50 little tiny buttons. I use like 5 of them. But there's one particular button called Fave. F-A-V, Fave. And with that Fave, you can go through and you can cut out all the Christy, religious channels. You can cut out all the Shop at Home channels. You can cut out all the sports, well, you like sports. I'm not a sports fan. I can cut out all the sports, channels. I can cut out all the, foreign language channels that I don't understand. And,
wow, that's the Staples Easy button.
Yeah, exactly. And so I have this little one button that I can scan through. But here's what I discovered. Because I deleted Fox News, so I wouldn't even have to see it while scrolling through my, surfing on the TV. Wouldn't even enter my transom. It'd just go right past it, wouldn't even notice it. And I would land on MSNBC. But guess what they're talking about day and night on NBC?
Joe Sestak.
Well, they're talking about on MSNBC what Rush Limbaugh said all day, what Glenn Beck said all day. It's just like they sort of, it's almost like they're cloaked. It's like they're pretending to be a somewhat liberal, biased network, but all they do, the Ed Show, all of them, they show like a 10-minute clip of Rush Limbaugh sitting there in front of his microphone and all the spew that I didn't want to hear because I don't have Fox. That's why I don't have Fox. I didn't want to hear that crap. But they're showing it on MSNBC, and CNN does the same thing.
And I am guilty of it from time to time myself.
Yeah, except you do it a little bit different. You point out the hypocrisy. They don't. They just kind of show it, and then they have a little panel discussion about,
God, you make it sound like there's finger sandwiches involved, Brad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what that means exactly, but.
Well, no, I mean, they have a little panel discussion. They bring out tea and cakes and ices and talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about what Rush Limbaugh said today. And then they show him on there, on his little cam. And he's fuming, but my point is that, yes, I see what they're trying to do. I see that they're trying to show, the hypocrisy that is Limbaugh and O'Reilly and Beck and all those. But what they're doing is they're giving them airtime on their network.
See, and that's a lesson I understand, Brad, because way back when I was on terrestrial radio in the fifth smallest radio market in America, which made it easy for me to be bought off the air, there was a right-wing freak in the morning whose name I will not mention, and I would get on the air at 7 o'clock at night and go till 10 p.m., and I would just do my show, okay? But I was so novel, apparently, and I drove the conservatives so absolutely around the bend, crazier than a sprayed roach, insane, that the next day, the right-wing guy would spend 2 hours of his show talking about me. And I never talked about him.
That's another thing that drives me crazy. Yeah.
And it was a beautiful thing, because I was the beneficiary of all the PR. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And maybe we need to learn a little bit about that. Maybe we need to get them playing clips of us.
Right.
I don't
mean
me because, I'm just a little loudmouth hillbilly with a microphone. But
I'm just going to have a little bit of humor in here. The space shuttle landed for the last time.
Yes.
This particular space shuttle, the Atlantis, landed for the last time. And I kind of thought, its name is the Atlantis. It's airtight. It's made to withstand the incredible pressure differential of outer space. Let's stick some astronauts in that thing and drop it.
and fly it down to the gusher?
Fly it down to the gusher.
And, you realize it's not as crazy as you probably think it sounds, because how do you know, I assume, being in Houston as you are, you do know how astronauts train for...
They train underwater. They train in these big pools filled with salt. Some kind of a buoyancy material.
Right, with a space shuttle in it.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know how their pressure suits work. I mean, their pressure suits are intended to keep pressure going in the opposite direction.
Right, they'd be crushed.
They would be crushed, but they seems to me like they could design something. I mean, they probably don't have enough time, but they might.
Well,
have
the submersibles. I mean, the submersibles are there. I mean, they've been down there and stuff. I mean, that's.
Oh yeah. But send them down there and pull a Hubble rescue.
Or blow the thing up. I still like
the. Anybody knows how to do it. Look at Apollo 13. If NASA can take a cardboard box and a tube and some hose and duct tape and save three lives with that, then they know how to do stuff because they're engineers.
Well, and we've got we really do have the American military, and nobody on the planet is better at blowing stuff up than the American military.
Can I have one last request before I let you go and get some more calls?
You sure can.
I want to hear you, if you have it. You may not, but I'm sure you probably do. I want to hear John Prine sing in Paradise.
I can do that. I might even do you one better. Let me see here. You know, I was at that...
you were talking about the mountaintop removal and the Green River and all...
Well, yeah, let me look here real quick while we talk, because this might just blow your mind. Come on, gotta find it.
Well, as long as it doesn't sound like my 79 Honda Accord that when I try to start it.
No, I understand that completely. No, so I'm looking here on the fly, and I'm hoping I can find it, because I downloaded it, I'm sure. I actually caught, the audio's not that great, but, you know, I was at that Music for the Mountains concert last week in Nashville, at the Ryman. No, I can't find it. I will honor your request. Let me pull it up real quick. But you want to talk about something magnificent. All those brilliant musicians on stage at the Ryman Auditorium sang Paradise.
It's a fantastic song.
It is. Well, I've got it right here by John Prine, and it doesn't sound like your 79 Honda.
When I was a little kid, back in the 70s, I had a copy of I want to say it was a John Denver record. I think it was Rocky Mountain High, and he covered that song. I think he did a really good job. As well.
Really? He covered Paradise? I never
knew
that.
He covered Paradise. It's on the Rocky Mountain High album.
Well, I had no idea.
Yeah. Maybe you could find that one, too.
I know I don't have that, but I will take a look about for it. And who knows? You know, the way things work around here, somebody's liable to send it to me. So.
Yeah. That's not the one where he sings, you know, Almost Level.
No, that's the lyric that I wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the lyric I wrote. But, no, I know of which you speak. So, you know, I'll see what I can pull off here. And we'll fire up Paradise right now.
All right. Well, fantastic. You have a good evening, and on to your next caller.
All right. Brad, good to hear from you. I'm glad you could chime in during, that we were on the same wavelength for a little bit.
Yeah. I'm having trouble getting on the whatchamacallit?
Chat room?
Yeah. Ever since the website changed, it won't accept my...
No, you got to do a redo. Go through.
But I couldn't find where to go. So.
Well, if you just go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, there's a link there where you re-register.
Okay. Do I have to come up with a new name and everything?
Yeah, probably. Or the old name. Just try it and see.
Yeah, because the new name just keeps saying, oh, that's already taken. Or, oh. You know, when I put an old, When I put my name in, it just is already taken.
Okay, bummer. Well, keep at it. We're making it work, making big changes. We're going to have this thing fully functional by the time we go to Netroots Nation.
Okay.
All right, Brad, good hearing from you.
All right, carry on.
Take care. Bye now. And you know what? How many other shows are there out there that actually do requests? I do. So from the great John Prine, Paradise.
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky where my parents were born. And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Well, sometimes we travel right down the Green River to the abandoned old prison down by Avery Hill, where the air smelled like snakes and we'd shoot with our pistols, but empty pop bottles was all we would kill. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. And the coal company came with the world's largest shovel, and they tortured the timber and stripped all the land. Well, they dug for their coal till the land was forsaken. Then they rode it all down as the progress of man. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. When I die, let my ashes float down the Green River. Let my soul roll on up to the Rochester Dam. I'll be halfway to heaven with paradise waiting, just 5 miles away from wherever I am. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366.
Beard Buck.
Wow, it's been a while since we did two straight shows, did 2 hours where we, you know, actually ran the intros at the right time. But we did that. Thanks, Brad. You kind of helped that happen. It's 5 minutes past the hour. Before we run back to the phones, and we are running back to the phones, and you know the number, of course, right? Toll free, it's 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This coming in from William. He says, I look back. He says, all I wonder now is what's next. I look back all these years, and there was DuPont who sent their poison, Monsanto, a train with hundreds of cars, not enough pusher locos to keep the slack out as the center tanker cars of the train were pulled from the tracks and spilled their chemical toxins in a river and made an entire town sick. Oil spill after oil spill, and today, here in Los Angeles, a truck tanker crashed and spilled hundreds, if not thousands, of gallons of fuel before bursting into flames on the I-91 freeway. There's not a year in recent history some corporate toxin-producing company has not caused damage. Then how long will it take before the BP oil gusher is gone from the news and out of the mind until the next man-made disaster unfolds? Not to sound alarmist and depressing, however. You know it'll happen. It's only a matter of time. Yeah, I know it'll happen. I know it has happened. I know it continues to happen. At this point in time, the oil gusher in the Gulf has finally reached one-tenth of the way to the Kingston coal ash disaster of December 2008 in East Tennessee. Right now, the BP oil gusher is a tenth as bad in terms of toxins, and in terms of volume, we think, as the Kingston coal ash disaster that practically no one knows about and that toxified the entire southeastern United States. Mm. But I guess William's right. It probably does. It gets just too damned hard to keep up with. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Hey, Jim.
How you doing?
Doing pretty good.
I heard my name mentioned in vain earlier, so I figured I'd give you a call.
I did. I took your name in vain. That would be me.
That's okay. Well, I'm just sitting here sipping on apps, wearing a green carnation, smoking black cigarettes. What else can you do, you know?
Well, you know, that sounds like a Friday around here.
And also on the TV is Doctor of Doom, one of these Mexican horror movies.
Uh-huh.
Surpassed only by the wrestling women by the Aztec mummy.
How that could surpass, I'm not quite sure.
Well, you know, just when you feel that the screen has reached the heights of its fulfillment, new wonders appear.
That they do.
But going back to Juanita's comment about J. Edgar Hoover, could I share some things with you about Mr. Hoover?
Oh, do please.
Well, I knew a girl when I worked in D.C. who got her start in the Federal Civil Service by working in Hoover's FBI. And number one, every afternoon when that bell rang, every pencil had to be in the exact same place on every desk. Every typewriter had to be positioned in the exact position, cover on, and every drawer had its own separate content, and if they would go through and inspect your office drawers and you had the wrong thing in the wrong compartment, you could be written up for it.
That's a little obsessive-compulsive.
Well, yeah, he was. And, of course, there was a special elevator that he and Clyde Tolson, his lover, would take, and nobody else was allowed to ride that elevator. Now, Hoover lived in a very fine Georgian mansion over in Georgetown. He lived there with his mother, of course. After his mother passed on, Clyde moved in with him. But in order not to have to cut the grass, his lawn was covered with AstroTurf.
Who?
Yeah, and none of his neighbors ever complained about it either. Because it looked terrible. And when Hoover was buried, he was buried in a lead casket.
Was he protecting his corpse from the Russian nuclear attack or what, Jim?
I don't know, but it ruptured four of the eight servicemen who had to carry that casket out of the Capitol Rotunda.
Was he buried in a stunning cocktail frock?
Well, I don't know about that, but he's buried in Congressional Cemetery, and I have friends who've been known to go up there and pee on his grave.
The more the, well, where that man's concerned, the more the merrier, Jim.
Well, I mean, he did build the FBI into something that it wasn't, because initially the FBI was called the Bureau of Easy Virtue, and he did do a lot to build it into a very effective police force. Now, I've got to give credit for that.
Some might say too effective, Jim.
Well,
I mean, considering the excesses of the Hoover FBI. You know, the things that he did with JFK, you know, just showed him the little file, that sort of thing.
Well, you know, that's basically what kept him in office. He took great comfort in his little black box or his black box on everybody. But he was something else. And going back to something else you said, you know, you were talking about Germany before the war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Berlin was a pretty wide-open town back then. Berlin in the 20s is just incredible during the days of the Weimar Republic. And in spite of the anti-gay thing with the article, it's called Paragraph 175.
Yes.
They sort of looked the other way on that. But when Hitler came to power, he did so with the help of a lot of gay people like Ernst Röhm and Heinz and other members of the SA. But all of a sudden, when he wanted to make his deal with the army, the SA had to go. And, of course, Hitler feared a second revolution that Rome wanted to create, which would, of course, cause him a lot of problems with not only the industrialists, but also the heads of the army, and that was Hitler's power base.
Very true. Very true. And that's why he... What was it, June something, 1934?
It was Operation Hummingbird. Actually, it was Heydrich who was in charge of it, given directions by Himmler, and of course both flowed from Chancellor Hitler, but nonetheless, that's when they took a trip down to Bavaria, and they beheaded the heads of the SA and shot a lot of them and stuff like that. But, Hitler was... surrounded by a number of homosexuals in his early rise to power. There's no question about that. And, of course, after that, he turned a completely different side. But, you know, Hitler was no exactly sexually normal person himself.
Well, no, apparently not. It took the form of, a little incestuous bent?
Well, we're talking, you know, masochism and stuff like that, because there was one actress, Renate Müller, who, you know, all the women wanted to go to bed with Chancellor Hitler, and, well, she did spend the night with him, and according to what she said, he wanted her to do things that I'm not going to describe on the air.
Yes, let's don't.
That were kind of bizarre, but nonetheless... All of a sudden, she jumped out of a window.
Ooh.
And, you know, that was taken care of. But, you know, there it is, and there you have it. However, as far as the... I wanted to say something else, and I've forgotten it. I'm not going to waste your time trying to remember it. But since you mentioned that, I thought I would just give you a buzz and... discuss what we just talked about with you, and I don't know how the skinheads feel about that sort of thing. I don't think they like gay people either, do they?
No, not so much. They don't like anybody but themselves.
Well, they're pretty much into their own thing, and I know that they've had to take active measures against them. As a matter of fact, they had a whole camp up in some part of the country that the federal government went in and destroyed.
Yeah, indeed.
And I think the Turner Diaries, there's some guy up in here in West Virginia. I don't know if he's still alive.
No, he's dead now.
Yeah, he had the whole...
The Turner Diaries were the motivating force behind Timothy McVeigh and his assault on Oklahoma City, Jim.
Yeah, I don't know if this guy has some kind of operation now, but I do know that I occasionally have listened to Kim Commando, who's that computer person,
mm-hmm.
and has hit a few wrong strokes and have gotten into their website, the Aryan Brotherhood website, and it is something you won't believe.
Oh, I've seen it. And you know, the fact of the matter is, Rand Paul is up to his eyeballs in Stormfront.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now, this thing with CSAC, what is going on there? Now,
I honestly don't know, Jim. That I keep asking the same question. Why would that be the first thing out of your mouth after you've had a historic victory over Arlen Specter? Why would you start talking about it again? I'm at a loss.
Well, I am too, because I mean, as I understand it, wasn't he given the suggestion that he might want to stay in Congress to enhance his career path? And, of course, no bribes were offered, no money given, nothing illegal. But there's some guy on TV today that was calling for an FBI investigation.
Oh, God, yeah. The entire Senate Judiciary or House Judiciary Republican side, you know, they want an investigation. Blah, 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 blah. There's nothing illegal in it.
No.
It's ugly politics. And, frankly, from Joe Sestak's standpoint, leave it alone. Let it go. Now, on the other hand, you know, maybe, this sounds kind of like the kind of power politics that Rahm Emanuel really does like to play, and I would be thrilled if Rahm Emanuel was out of the administration. But that is not gonna happen.
No, I don't think so. I think Rahm Emanuel is one of those people who has been made to feel as though he is indispensable. And, of course, you know what Simon Stowe once said about indispensable people.
There's cemeteries full of them, right?
You got it, baby. You got it. Exactly. And one other thing. It doesn't look too good for the Democrats. I would say the Democratic ship of state has hit an iceberg, and I would say at least three watertight compartments are flooded, okay? And it's not going to take much more to go into the fourth.
Well, it may look and feel like that, but, Jim, I'm not so sure that's the case. Because, again, I look to those Kentucky poll numbers. First of all, for all their bluster and all of their the hot damn, the teabaggers couldn't get out the vote. Even in states with the, you know, big election to-dos, you saw 30, 25, 28, 34% turnouts. That's not the kind of turnout they're going to have if they're going to unseat a whole bunch of incumbent Democrats.
Well, I hope you're right, my friend. I do.
And again, let me just remind you that, you know, the world is talking about Rand Paul because Rand Paul is simply crazier than a sprayed roach. But the fact of the matter is his Democratic opponents on the other side of the primary pulled more votes than he did.
Well,
that can't be encouraging for his crowd.
I hope you're right. But remember, the Nazis only had 37.4% of the vote when they finally got in power. But if the economy should go south, I'm afraid the complexion might change for the worse.
Well, I mean, there is no doubt, Jim, that there's a whole bunch of ugliness out there. There most assuredly is.
I mean, basically, if the economy does go south, it's going to be very, very bad, and I wouldn't expect anything good in November.
You know, one of the best things that could happen for Barack Obama is to A, get this damn thing stopped down in the Gulf. Job one. And the minute that the oil stops gushing.
Did you see what BP did today?
Which?
Oh, they had 1,200 workers on the beach where Obama was to inspect.
Right.
And then, of course, as soon as he left,
they're gone.
Only 12 remained.
Right. Yeah.
And
what would we call that, Jim? A Potemkin oil spill cleanup?
I was thinking of a Potemkin village. Yeah, exactly. And there was Barack Obama picking up little nodules of some type of substance that's the offshoot of this oil spill.
Well, what I was saying though, Jim, is what you know. Job one is stopping this, but job two, the minute that that's done, he needs to start breathing fire and brimstone and start talking about holding people to account.
Well, we had this conversation Wednesday night.
We did indeed.
Remember. And if he doesn't do it, he's bringing ruin on himself and his administration. And I realize he's not a very compassionate man. And when he did mention the thing about his little girl, that's the closest he came to showing any element of...
And then Glenn Beck turned around and sleazed the little girl.
Well, you know, that's terrible, because remember when Harry Truman was in... Well, you don't remember Harry Truman, and I don't either, because, I mean, I was just in diapers when Harry Truman was in office, but I remember that Drew Pearson made a comment about Harry Truman's daughter and the ability, or her lack of ability, to form a piano and to sing. And you know what Truman said?
Yeah, he's a son of a bitch.
No, he said more than that.
Oh, okay. I thought it was SOB, because Drew Pearson turned around and formed the SOB Society.
But he also told Drew Pearson that he was going to whip his ass.
And, you know, I think Harry would have.
He would have, definitely. I mean, he would have walked right over, because Truman was noted for taking those long walks with just one or two servicemen with him. And he would have probably have gone to Drew Pearson's house and caned him right there on the spot. But, you know, I think Barack Obama needs to take a little lesson from Harry Truman and have a little fire and brimstone there. And really, he really needs to begin to assert himself and show some compassion and not appear to be as unmoved by this thing.
Clinical. Clinical. I think that the word we're looking for is clinical, Jim.
Not be present in a situation like this to be clinical and maintain your base of support. When you have people there who are losing their means of livelihood, and even worse, what we are facing is an ecological genocide. Now, those are the two words that I apply to that situation in the Gulf. It is becoming an ecological genocide.
It has all the potential in the world to be one, Jim. Jim, have a very good Memorial Day weekend, my friend. I know you will have much on your mind.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye now. And since I talk about it, I kind of got to talk. I mentioned it. I got to talk about it. You know by now what he did. You know what Glenn Beck did. But I don't say this by means of, you know, with reference to my conversation with Brad, of giving free publicity to Glenn Beck, although I may very well be doing it. I do this from the standpoint of I want us to, damn it, there must be some level of confrontation that we engage in with evil, in order to beat it back. I had another email a few moments ago from our dear friend Jude, and she cited me to a link called White Pride Homeschool. You don't want to go there. The words say it all. But Jude wrote, when I did some research into Rand Paul, he is for elimination of the Department of Education, which I'm sure you're already aware of. Most must clarify, though, Bob, the following found on Wikipedia. Opposes federal regulation of homeschooling and believes in restoring parental rights to education. Says Jude, what a way to control and negate American history for the small ones, who will be unable to think independently or logically. These children will join the ranks with students from Regents, from Liberty, and more universities of their ilk. Think, you know, Bob Jones University, Oral Roberts University. Jude says, the future may have to live in the void of ignorance and hate. More reasons we must not resign ourselves into thinking we have no impact. Just look into the face of a child one loves, and then utilize the energy of anger, damn it. Read that again, Bob. Just look into the face of a child one loves, and then utilize the energy of anger, damn it. And I have a lot of communication with Jude, and there's not a lot of damn it that comes from Jude. When Jude says damn it, Jude is upset. And rightfully, righteously so. And so with that in mind, listen to a millionaire professional broadcaster attack a child.
Daddy, did you plug the hole yet? Daddy.
No, I didn't, honey.
I know you petted it on an United date.
Mm-hmm.
And
big country.
I was wondering, Daddy, if you've plugged that hole yet.
Honey, not yet.
Why not, Daddy? Why, Daddy?
Not time yet, honey. Haven't done enough damage.
Daddy?
Not enough damage yet, honey.
Daddy?
Yeah?
Why do you hate black people so much?
The part white, honey.
The what?
What?
The what?
What?
What'd you say?
Excuse me?
This is such a ridiculous... This is such a ridiculous thing that his daughter...
Oh, it's so
Daddy?
Stupid. How old is his daughter?
Like 13?
Well, one of them's, I think, 13, one's 11 or something.
Did you plug the hole yet, Daddy? Is that their, that's the level of their education, that they're coming to Daddy and saying, Daddy, did you plug the hole yet? Plug the hole!
Yes, I was doing some deep sea diving, yesterday, and,
Daddy?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was doing some... Yeah, honey, guys.
Why do you still let the polar bears die? Daddy? Why do you still let Sarah Palin destroy the environment? Why not, Daddy? Why not just put her in some sort of a camp?
I do you have the audio of him saying, Daddy, did you plug the hole yet?
No.
That was really cute.
It was cute.
Hmm. Which one of his kids can he use this time?
Daddy? Daddy, why do people want all the trees to die?
You vomiting yet?
Why are you the only man, you and George Soros and everyone at the Center for American Progress? Why does everyone else want the planet to die? Daddy, the best thing you ever did was get that BlackBerry. I don't know how to reach you. Because that's the BlackBerry, Mommy told me, is just right, so you can be contacted by the people at the Center for American Progress all the time. So if your teleprompter ever goes down, you can just put your BlackBerry there in front of you, and they can give all the words to you right there, because Daddy, you're a puppet. Did you know that? That we do a puppet show. Mommy said, your presidency is like doing a puppet show. Somebody has their hand in your back, and they just, is it George Soros that is making you talk like that? Is that who it is?
No, honey, it's Joel Rogers.
I can't wait until the day when the predilections that run through Glenn Beck's family finally catch up with him, and he puts a loaded revolver in his mouth and blows his brains out the back of his skull. I can't wait for that day. I yearn for that day. I eagerly await the day when Glenn Beck goes all Richard Corey just for all of us. Imagine that. That was 4 minutes. 4 minutes of life on planet Earth that he spent mocking an 11-year-old child, and he is paid millions of dollars to do it. Maybe that shows me as being somewhat shallow in pointing out that there's a dollar figure attached to his hatred. But that's the only reason he did it. It's the only reason he did it. He has paid millions of dollars to mock a child.
Oh, but breaking news, America, world.
Glenn Beck has apologized. And this is on his website. Way back when Woodward and Bernstein were writing All the President's Men, they developed a term called a non-denial denial for the way that the Nixon administration would try to deny some recent felony without actually denying it and thereby overtly lying. They were lying indirectly or obliquely, I suppose. And they called it a non-denial denial. Well, this is a non-apology apology. Glenn Beck posted a statement on his website, as I noted. It purports to be an apology. You tell me if it's an apology. In discussing how President Obama uses children to shield himself from criticism, I broke my own rule about leaving kids out of political debates. The children of public figures should be left on the sidelines. It was a stupid mistake, and I apologize. And as a dad, I should have known better. Is that an apology? Because I think if it was an apology, it would be more along the lines of, on my radio show, I openly and viciously and shamelessly and sickly and twistedly attacked an 11-year-old girl. And to do so was wrong and evil, and I profess to be a follower of Christ Jesus. And I therefore humbly ask the forgiveness of President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama for the attack that I levied against their children. That's what an apology sounds like. What Glenn Beck did in discussing how President Obama uses children to shield himself from criticism. That's no apology. That's a psychopath at work. That is a non-apology apology. And on the day that I read, that Glenn Beck, that the suicide that runs in his family has finally caught up with him, and he has sucked car exhaust or taken poison or a warm bath, and killed himself, or shot himself, or hanged himself, or done something to voluntarily rid the planet of his pestilent presence, I'll feel a little bit better about planet Earth. I'm not kidding. I'm not joking. I'm not speaking allegorically, similarically, or metaphorically.
I am as real as I can get. Sandra writing in. Oh, no. That bitch should be shot. President or not, Obama needs to put a foot up his ass. And he does. He does. This is one of those where you call him out in the noonday sun. You know, all of that. It is one thing to be at play in the filthy swill of American politics. Using attacks on 11-year-olds is so far beyond the pale as to make the pale invisible by distances measured in light years, light centuries. Cindy disagrees out in the Great Northwest with me pointing out these evils and running it, apparently. She says, whether or not you're a Christian, most agree that Jesus Christ was a master teacher. He taught by many methods, his life becoming an example of how one should live a righteous life, most agree. He taught how to beat back evil. He did so by word and by deed example. When he was praying in the wilderness, the devil himself approached him and tempted him, and Jesus turned his back to the devil and said, get thee away from me, Satan. By word, deed, and example, we learn how to beat back evil. We ignore it and walk away. By repeating the outrages of people like Limbaugh and Beck and all those turkeys like them, we feed their hate machine. We justify their existence. We give them the power to repeat again and again their indignities and foul-mouthed lies. In order to reduce them to nothing, we must turn our backs on them and simply not listen, ignore them, never write about them, never talk about them. My mother taught me that also. She said, ignore them and they will go away. But, Cindy, they won't go away. They don't go away. They are with us always, you know. And that's the difference. This is a different kind. This is a different kind, a different quantity, a different quality of evil. And it is sickening. Simply sickening. Let's check out the phone lines here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brian.
Hey, Brian, what's up?
From New Hampshire. I just wanted to check out. I didn't think I was going to get a chance to get on the air with, but I was, first of all, I want to wish, God love her, God bless her, Cassie, good luck at Princeton. I've been a professional student there along with my mental illness and other scholarly conditions for years at Harvard Extension School. I got my degree from there. So since she's a Princeton Tiger, naturally she's the enemy now. It's going to be worse than North Korea versus South Korea. Princeton, it's not as bad as if she was a Yalie, you know, a Yalie and gone to Yale.
Yeah, because that's really awful.
It would be pretty bad. Yeah, it would be pretty, it's still pretty bad. I think Harvard Square has so much to offer, especially a young woman like Cassie, but so does Princeton University. It's one of the great. I was looking at the website last night there after when she was talking to you about that. It says it's the proclaims itself to be that's their advertisement. I don't think that the academics and the curriculum necessarily backs up what they're saying, but it says the finest undergraduate university on earth. And I, as a Harvard man, I might disagree with that. But the fact is that. Yeah, there are great research universities and
Well, you know, Princeton, Brian, is little Jimmy Madison's alma mater.
Yeah. That's right. And, what's the man that...
As well as Aaron Burr's.
Aaron Burr's and the person that a number of black scholars, African scholars have gone down. They left Harvard because it wasn't quite so... They were not getting as much backup as they needed. I forget the man that wrote the book Race Matters. There, Cornel West.
Yes.
He's gone to Princeton, I believe now. Yeah, and it's a great university. And I wish her the best. And I think she's gonna. Yeah, it was like other people were saying last night. She's gonna be a great young. She's already a great young American citizen. She'll do even better. after, but during and after Princeton as well. You know, that obviously that she's going to be a, and that's right. I always mix up, you know, one, another great American who, he didn't go to Princeton, but he, I always mix him up with, I always mix up Rutgers with Princeton. Paul Robeson went to Rutgers, I believe.
I believe you're right.
Yeah, the great singer and great communist, but a great thinker, too, who was a great intellectual man and a true patriot to this country there. He was just the kind of leader, this the opinion leader this country needed at that time, and we need more like him now, of course. Just talking about the what's happened, that Glenn Beck, that, you know, like you're saying, the most... I know it's the weekend. I did try to make something light out of things there, but this easy, you know, that's, you know, that's just, it's going way, way too far to, I can't understand why he has a following that it doesn't make sense to me that,
Well, Brian, if I could interject just for a moment, that's relatively simple to answer. For once, I get an easy question.
Okay.
And it's all encapsulated in a few little letters. I-O-K... I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Right.
You see,
or
if
you're a corporatist hack, yeah. That's right.
He won't miss a payday. He won't be taken off the air for a day. He ought to be suspended from broadcasting for 6 months. He ought to be taken off the air forever for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Because he's proven that he is not, because remember, it's not like he broadcasts just on the internet like I do, okay?
No.
He utilizes, that was his radio show, not his television show. His television show is delivered on cable, Brian.
Yeah.
His radio show is delivered over the airwaves that belong to the people of the United States of America. And that is an abuse. Listen, if saying the word shit is an abuse worthy of a $275,000 or more fine on the open airwaves, then what kind of abuse is that filth that he put out on the public airwaves? What kind of abuse is that, Brian?
Absolutely. I agree that it's completely again, look what we have for... The so-called highest lawman in the country, Eric Holder, he once defended those terrorists down there, anti-union organizers, the killers of union organizers in Columbia, those places there for the corporations down there. Eric Holder defended them as a lawyer. So that's our highest lawman. And the FCC it's gotten somewhat, there was a, it has a great lady on there. I believe she's from South Carolina, African-American lady there. It's a real populist. On the FCC, on the board of commissioners there, a good American, and here and there, you know, Obama has made some real changes here and there, but just, it's never gonna get noticed or given credit, of course, by this corporate media. And the fact is, I don't know what he can do about this, you know, about the oil spill, Bob. On one hand, though, I've gone to the Navy's NavyMill.com, whatever their website, and you think with all the trillions and tens of trillions it really is now that they spent in over the years in the American military and the most powerful Navy in human history and in the world, they would have something to stop this kind of thing, to fight the man-made disasters, you know, terrorist-made, the oil rig, explosion, whatever you want to call it, whatever would cause this kind of thing, that they would have some kind of contingency plan in place, in cooperation with BP and Shell and the rest of those corporate criminals, to stop this kind of thing and have even a military solution, if that's necessary. They dynamite, you know, the mines that are completely unsafe, that they cannot be used any longer, right, Bob? So that, you know, if an occasional kid or something going on a hiking trip or something doesn't wander into them, they'll just dynamite them, right? There must be, I don't know the physics of it, I'm not an engineer, but there must be a way to, having nothing to do with having to use tactical nukes or anything like that, and there must be a way to just take this thing down. And is it the fact that BP wants to use the oil later on? Is that
yes, Brian? Yes, bingo. BP still wants to suck profit out of that because I admit I'm speculating, but I'm not a gambling man, you know, that kind of thing. But I would be willing to put a $20 bill on this. And okay. And that is this. I guarantee you that somewhere inside some tower that is controlled by BP, there's a couple of engineers or a dozen or whatever who are busily trying to figure out not how to plug the well, but how to rehabilitate it once the gushing has been stopped so they can get in there and start pumping oil and start making profits off of it. That is what has controlled I'm guessing. I know I'm speculating.
It gets into my own way of thinking about the whole tragedy of it. When I think back, we haven't been the same nation since those somehow allowed for our September 11th attacks and the stolen election December 12, 2000. To be honest about it, we haven't been the same nation probably since the corporatist and oil profiteers killed off that great and good man in November
John 19, Kennedy.
1963. John Kennedy. I believe this could be, you could call it the assassination of the Gulf of Mexico and all its people and life forms of all kinds and well beyond, perhaps. There's got to be a way to, at this point, there can't be, I can't see any legal, there's no way that you, the BP doesn't really, maybe they own the immediate area where that oil comes out of for whatever their corporate power, even with the corporate power given them by the fascists on the Supreme Court, some of them the same people that voted in George Bush in December 2000. But the fact is they do not own the Gulf of Mexico and all of the fishing communities and all of the life forms and all of the marshlands and the great states of Louisiana and Mississippi, a great city in Port of Mobile, Alabama. My father was a longshoreman for decades, for years, and he started out as a Boston Irish Shrieker. I remember that we met some ILA members, International Longshoremen Union members, that was back in the late 70s, early 80s, I believe. Guys from Mobile, Alabama, they were the most charming guys. You people in Alabama there, I know you got some crazy right-wing so-called political leaders there that, you know, like you're saying, they talk with that funny southern brogue, I call it there, as an Irish-American, that they should be drum out of any Arizona school district, too. They shouldn't be allowed to speak anywhere at an Arizona school, public school. But the Alabama, you know, there's a great southern drawl there. It's a great accent. Those guys had that same southern gentlemanliness and charm about them. And also, that's a fact that I talk about the Harvard Crimson, versus the Princeton Tigers, but the real Crimson Tide and real football power, of course, you guys just proved in the last year was Alabama, of course. The Alabama Crimson Tide. That's the real Crimson in terms of football. Harvard just came in. They just barely took the second place in the Ivy League there. But, you know, like I say, that's not real football. They have a committee meeting or they get into a – they'll study a quote from Immanuel Kant or before they map out a play in a Harvard or any Ivy League football game just about. But University of Pennsylvania just won that last year. But Alabama, you know, your great state, and Florida's panhandle, like you've talked about there, that the working man's the Riviera there, that may all be gone eventually. This is a criminal act of criminal proportions that it makes September 11th even, and I think that was the worst single date in American history. As evil as that date was, that over time this may even dwarf that. It certainly may. You know, I feel so helpless, Bob. I don't know. I just think this president, I do want him to be doing more, and I think that's what was brought out when he talks about his daughter there. Never mind the childish, the willfully ignorant people there like Glenn Beck and the rest of the lunatic followers there, but the fact is they've got to stop this thing somehow, there may well be greater risk involved, and the solution may offer some greater risk too, but it is like a dying, if they had had some chance to save John F. Kennedy, if he had not been that the headshot, if they had somebody grabbed that coward at the grassy knoll there from the behind that fence that killed him, I believe it was a hitman from some Corsican mob or something like that, but if they had grabbed that coward, that Gordon Arnold was there, he was a military guy, but if somehow they had stopped that final,
the whole country, the whole arc of America's future history changes on that day. It does.
Yeah,
it really does.
Save, but that's that's what they may need, that kind of a, you know, some kinds of surgery, or when a surgeon is a humanitarian, of course a doctor, but they cut into human beings' flesh in order to save that human being life there, and we may need to do something even more invasive than the actual drilling itself in that what's happened there at that deep
well horizon. And you know, people talk about the thermite bomb and stuff, Brian, and
yeah,
and I understand how that might work, but by the same token, I'm thinking about the concussive force of that at that pressure.
That I know.
And what, you know, what would that do? What would that do to the life there? We are in God, what else can you call it? We are in a hell of BP's own making. We're in
that's
it.
Right.
BP made it.
And that's what it's like.
As Mary Landrieu said, they'll fix it at their convenience.
Oh my God, she's disgusting. I'll let you go, Bob. I just think that it's like you and I, you know, like the true progressives, the true Americans, and you know there are a few sane Republicans left that are ruminating over this about just as we just did about what can you possibly do to really actually save the situation, stop the damn gusher from continuing its death. It's death, pervading death perhaps for decades to come, but how do you stop that? But at the same time, we've got a country of sheeple that were so easily led to just say, well, if he's got to bomb the hell out of Saddam Hussein, we know he's hiding them. We know he hit him.
Well, I had that clip at the beginning of the program, Brian. Brian,
we know that.
I had that clip at the beginning of the program where the former president of Argentina has divulged now that George Bush told him to fix the Argentine economy by going to war with somebody. You know, who? Brazil? Chile? Bolivia?
Yeah.
The Falklands didn't work out that well.
That's what I'm saying. Don't listen to me. I'm trying to go by. But I know Obama's got better scientists and better military people out there, too, than they should take charge of the situation. I do believe that. But they can handle it. But we don't need to be... We're too much of a showy, vicious nation. That you know what that is? That's kind of like when you got the leadership, when you hold the office, maybe you got the position, the vice president of a company because your father owns it, or so you use that power to bully other people there when the other people are the real productive workers of that company, and they could probably just step on you and get rid of you like a needless bug there, you know, a pest, and get you out of the company there, and it would run much better. That's showy vicious. That's like in the way of that inbred blue blood George W. Bush and the rest of the Republicans and the teabaggers. They're disgusting. But I know that there's got to be some solution, and I don't want to be showy vicious about it.
I hope there is, Brian. I hope there is.
Solution. I don't know.
I don't know either. But I tell you what, it's damnable. It is a damnable feeling sitting here impotently on our hands watching that body of water die and the coast that sits astride it. That is, it is the most damnable feeling of impotence I've ever felt. Brian, I've got to roll on, but you have a wonderful weekend, all right?
You too.
Take care.
Bye
now.
Bye-bye.
Brian calling from New Hampshire, and it sounds like he is willing to forgive Cassie for going to Princeton, and that's mighty big of him. I got an email here from Jack in Shreveport that I got to share with you before we run out of time. It was slugged on the subject line, the Beck variable X. Bob, I realize that the subject line of this email is not understandable. The reason is that I could not come up with sufficient terminology to describe how I felt when I heard what he said concerning President Obama and his daughter. I realize that Beck made an apology. Beck's apology is not enough. Anyone with some essence of humanity would not say what Beck said. We need to assess the quality of human beings, or Americans, that have access to the airwaves. And that is access to airwaves that they really shouldn't have. They usurped it. The toxic crap that is broadcast over talk radio is so much more vile than what the same hosts broadcast over cable TV. If cable TV viewers knew what these same hosts said on their radio shows, perhaps they'd realize how vile their favorite hosts are. This goes for Beck, Hannity, etc. The Beck clip you played is one of the most disgusting, vile things I have ever heard. But thanks for putting it out there, no matter how horrible it was. Signed, Jack in Shreveport. And see, that's the thing. This is not an isolated incident. This is not something that happened with Glenn Beck in a vacuum. If you are old enough, you do remember during Rush Limbaugh's jiggling, disgusting, abortive foray into television. You will recall when he referred to then little Chelsea Clinton, who has gone on to become an exquisite young woman, both in of mind and appearance and of form and substance and quality. You will recall that Rush Limbaugh referred to her in that phase of gawky, girlish adolescence. He referred to her as the White House dog. The White House dog. Yeah, he did. This goes on and on and on. The abuse of the public trust and the public airwaves goes on and on and on. And the liberals, if we so much as say boo, or point out, for instance, that those anchor babies that Rand Paul wants to run out of the country, point out, for instance, as Matt Osborne did to me earlier in the program, that lo and behold, Michelle Malkin herself is an anchor baby. Yeah. Or the fact that, you know, let's say, how about Mitt Romney's daddy was born in Mexico? Well, then we're haters, right? Yeah. So that's the program for tonight. I hope you have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Remember the reason for the holiday, please. Remember those who have gone before. I imagine Ferg will insist upon, well, we can't go to his grandfather's grave. It's in Alabama. So we'll go up on the hill. We'll go up on the hill to his great uncle's grave. The great uncle neither he nor I ever met. His great uncle Fred, who died in a diversionary campaign to the Normandy invasion down in the diversion being down in the south of France. It was one of those Churchill things. We'll go and do that, and we'll remember. May will end on Monday. Thank you to those of you who have stepped up in the last day or so to make things a little better than they were looking like they were going to be. We're only about $600 or so away from making our May fundraising goal. And ending $600 short is certainly better than ending $1,000 short. It means less comes out of our pocket to keep things going here, because our pockets aren't very deep at all. So thank you. If you can help, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, or you can simply PayPal. That is tied to this email address here, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. You can also use the snail mail address. Thank you. Thanks for a great, albeit short, week. And thanks to all of you who contribute of your funds, of your ideas, your calls, your participation in the chat room, your kind calls off air, your kind emails off air, all the ways that you do contribute to make the horn a much, much better thing than it would be if I was just sitting here running my mouth. Thank you to Lottie in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thank you to Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, who's got a Netroots Nation scholarship, and you did it! You did it. A big part of it, you did. See what you can do when you set your minds to it. Thank you. That means Matt will be there to help some as we ourselves go to Netroots Nation in July. Thank you. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, our webmaster, web designer, and so many things that almost are impossible to state. Thank you to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, there when I have some sort of horrifying question. Thank you to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, who since 2002 has literally saved liberal talk on the internet at whiterosesociety.org. And yes, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. Have a good weekend, all. A memorable weekend. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Just right, walk right up here on the porch and kick your feet up. Get you a cold glass of sweet iced tea. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn. I'm Bob, of course. No, I'm Bob Kincaid, not Bob, of course. Who do I think I am? It is Friday on the front porch on the horn, and we are all set for a dandy. Mighty warm here in the hills and hollers of what's left of almost level West Virginia. Mighty warm indeed. A few high, sort of thunderstormy-looking clouds out there, but nothing falling right now. The air like a sodden sponge. And here we sit this Friday. This Friday, the 28th of May. Standing on the verge of Memorial Day weekend. A serious, serious holiday marked now by incessant barbecuing and the industrially produced hamburgers being ruined on grills and turned into little patties of charcoal. But it's Friday on the front porch on the horn. And we're going to have a good one tonight. We are definitely going to have a good one tonight going into the holiday weekend. The Memorial Day weekend traditionally being the gateway into official, if not, geophysical summer. Summer sort of begins with Memorial Day. Back when America had a real infrastructure, back when communities cared about themselves, back before the Republican Party ruined everything, this was always that weekend that children looked forward to when the pools opened. When they'd be splashing around in the cool swimming the swimming pool waters of community swimming pools all across, but not anymore, at least not around here. I have no idea when the pool will open here in Fayette County, but we hope that it will. But it is. It's the unofficial opening of summer, and I guess they're going to drive some fossil fuel-laden automobiles very quickly somewhere around Indianapolis or something this weekend at some point.
I'm not one of those that just grabs me. I'm not a race car racing fan, but, you know, whatever. I'm sure there'll be good music playing somewhere. But what we're going to do tonight, we're going to prop our feet up, and we're going to talk. And here in about a half an hour, we're going to have a conversation with our good friend Bob Furtick from Democrats.com. Just a general political discussion to get the weekend going. We will let it see where it takes us. I've got a few things on my list. I'm sure he's got a few things on his list. We'll get together with him here in about 26 minutes or so. By the way, program note, we will be on the air Monday night, I assume. I would rather mark Memorial Day by being here than not being here. And remember those who need remembering, and offer you a chance to remember any that need remembering on Memorial Day. Good enough? I hope so. And thanks to you, we have, I asked for 200. I got 25% of that. Thanks to the 50 of you who have gone and liked Nancy's Yogurt on Facebook in that little horn experiment we've been carrying out. That is a number that they will kind of have to notice, I should think. Thanks to you who were active enough to go and actually go to your Facebook account and go over and like them. It was apparently too much for some people, but it wasn't too much for 50 of you, and I appreciate it. I really, really do. It's important to see what kind of things we are willing to do, especially when there are things that don't cost money, that might contribute to some overall idea down the road. So thank you to you. That's right, Marty. That's right. Sweet iced tea? No. Shall we say adult beverages? We shall say that too. That goes without saying on the front porch. There's always a big zinc galvanized wash tub with long necks and brown bottles stacked up to their very caps with crushed ice and a little bit of rock salt thrown over top to make the ice cooler and the long necks colder by extension. So yeah, that's involved too. But weather like this, you don't want to go the hard liquor cocktail route. I just don't think so. No. Well, sangria might not be bad, though. Sounds tasty, doesn't it? Now, where to begin this evening? Why don't we begin with crazy? You know, there's mean we can go to, crazy we can go to. Let's go to mean and crazy. I know, some of you are sick of hearing about him, but you know what? This guy has to be buried. This guy has to be covered up. No, he doesn't have to be buried and covered up. This guy has to be exposed for the freak he is. I suspect you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking, of course, about Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Sheesh. You know, we spend a lot of time on this program talking about the horrors of mountaintop removal. Well, Rand had some things to say about mountaintop removal, too. And they're considerably different from what you're going to hear on this program about mountaintop removal. Namely, and to wit, let's see here. Yeah, here we go, Rand.
And these 100 products. You know, we want the freedom of the marketplace to work. We want the money left in Kentucky and not to...
Oh, we're going to talk about the freedom of the marketplace. You remember that marketplace. That's the marketplace where people are free to not, where businesses should be free not to seat persons of color in their, at their lunch counters and so forth. Yeah, that free marketplace. Do continue, Rand Paul, please.
Taken to Washington.
You mentioned coal, and I noticed on your website you talk about energy freedom. What role would coal play, if any, in your overall energy plan for America?
Well, I think huge. I think people out here would find that I'd be a great friend to coal, not because I come to Eastern Kentucky to pander to coal, but because I believe business should be left alone from government. I think the permit process needs to be made easier from the federal level and the state level.
How much easier can it get?